Omega grad student gets pregnant. You'll never guess what happens next. By Attack of the Z. Read by X-Man Hater. Summary. Sometimes you get knocked up, and then fall in love with the super hot lawn boy who swoops in to save your ass.
So, guess who got knocked up?
Wei Ying practices asking his mirror.
No, terrible. Guess I pregoed my ego. Oh god, definitely not that. I regret to inform you all that despite your hopes, I am in fact reproducing.
Wei Ying groans and thumps his head forward into the mirror, sliding it down until the top of his head is pressed against it and he's staring at his stomach.
This is all your fault, he accuses.
The app he'd downloaded onto his phone after approximately 17 at-home pregnancy tests and one frantic visit to the health clinic says it's the size of a blueberry, so he's not sure that it quite understands the judgment Wei Ying is raining down on it. Still, it feels good to place the blame squarely on someone else's shoulders, even if that someone doesn't have shoulders yet, and is not, in fact, even really a someone at this point.
I have an announcement,
Wei Ying says, as soon as he sits down at a table at the spot not far off campus where he's meeting Zheng Cheng and Yan Li for lunch.
Oh god, you're dropping out of grad school,
Jiang Cheng says, already looking like he's about to work himself up into a proper fight over the mere thought of such a thing.
What? No,
Wei Ying says, and then,
wait, actually, I hadn't thought about it.
Because he hasn't. Because his brain has been a constantly shrieking klaxon of, pregnant, 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 since he found out, and he hasn't even really considered anything else.
No, he says finally, firmly, decisively. I have way too much student loan debt to not get an extremely expensive fancy piece of paper out of this.
Oh, Zheng Cheng says, and then,
well, what did you do then?
How dare you think this is something I did? My own brother!
Adopted,
Zheng Cheng interrupts, though it lacks any sting. Zheng Cheng, Yan Li scolds.
Doesn't trust me! What an outrage! What an insult! What horror!
Wei Ying clutches a hand to his chest dramatically, his eyes wide. He thinks if he really tried, he could force a couple of tears, but that seems like overkill just to fluster Jiang Cheng.
One day when you least expect it, Wei Ying, I'm pregnant,
Wei Ying declares, before Jiang Cheng can really get started, complete with jazz hands and all.
Calling the what?
That leaves Jiang Cheng's mouth merely a shriek might be a little too generous. Yan Li's eyes promptly well up with tears that she is very bravely attempting to pretend are not there.
Don't freak out,
Wei Ying says, ducking his head a little in an attempt to pretend people aren't blatantly staring at them now.
I'm not freaking out, and if I was, it'd be valid,
Jiang Cheng snaps and winces when Yan Li pinches his arm.
How are you pregnant? What the fuck, Wei Ying?
Well, you see, you know, when an Omega's feeling a little horny and a lot stressed, he starts hooking up with this truly obnoxious Alpha getting his fucking MBA, even though he swore after that one really disastrous, 3 months in undergrad that he'd never fuck around with business majors ever again. Apparently for good reason, may I add. But, the dick is good, and the Omega's running on, 3 hours of sleep and an unfortunate and possibly dangerous amount of caffeine pills, so, whatever, who cares what his personality is like? The guy can brag all about how none of this matters because he has a buddy whose startup he's going to help with all he wants. The Omega doesn't care. And then...
Wei Ying takes a deep breath and leans over the table to slap a hand over Jiang Cheng's mouth before he can interrupt Wei Ying's explanation.
Because of the aforementioned lack of sleep and stress, he, forgets to keep track of his heats because, whatever, they're all out of whack anyway because, again, stress or whatever, because the human body is a scam. So the Omega just, doesn't even question why he's super extra down to fuck one night when his NBA booty call invites him over, until it's weeks later and he's peeing on a stick at 3 a.m. because holy shit, what the fuck. And then he attempts to knock Ryan to the phone and the dude who knocked him up is like, I really don't care what you do about it and it's probably not even mine, and slut shames the Omega. That, Zheng Cheng, is how someone gets fucking pregnant.
He finishes, removing his hand from Zheng Cheng's mouth only to jab a finger at him. Zheng Cheng looks like he wants to self-immolate and or possibly murder someone. Probably MB asshole. His wants-to-murder Wei Ying look is incredibly different. The murderous intentions are kind of soothing, actually. Yan Li looks torn between laughing and crying, her hand pressed to her mouth, her eyes suspiciously wet.
In the meantime, their waitress has arrived and looks like she wants to quit her job and run away to live in the woods. Weiying relates.
Well then, the waitress starts, clapping her hands together and very visibly pretending like the entire restaurant didn't just witness what happened.
Can I get you guys anything to start? Drinks? Appetizers?
Weiying is leaving her such a big tip.
Luncheon, luncheon, luncheon,
Weiying says as he drapes himself dramatically over Luncheon's lap, where he's sitting on the couch in the office they share.
Weiying, Luncheon says, in what Weiying will take for a greeting, lifting his laptop in time for Weiying to not land on it, and then settling it right down on top of Weiying's back.
Do you have any snacks? You always have snacks.
You do not like my snacks, Luncheon says. You think they're too... how did you say it? Granola-y?
Because they're literally granola. You literally live off granola. I know this is Berkeley, but do you have to be a stereotype, Luncheon? It's shameful.
He's pillowed his face on his arms on the couch cushion next to them, so he can't see Luncheon's face, but he's sure that he's giving Weiying a very unimpressed look. His unimpressed look is not all that different than his normal expression, but Weiying shares an office with the guy, sees him literally every day in meetings and classes, and even sometimes just to have fun or hang out, outside of anything to do with school, and has made a point of bothering him frequently. He knows the encyclopedia of Luncheon micro-expressions. He could very well write the encyclopedia of Luncheon micro-expressions.
You may have some if you'd like, Luncheon says finally, instead of arguing with Weiying about the validity of his bougie hippie food.
That's probably smart, though somewhat disappointing. Weiying could have gone on forever. He loves going on about Luncheon's bougie hippie food.
He's got a whole bit about Luncheon as a hippie with bell bottoms.
Luncheon shifts around without disrupting Weiying too much, and a reusable snack bag full of granola is plopped in front of Weiying's face.
My hero,
Weiying says, fishing out a handful and stuffing it into his mouth.
He's found it, the most boring food in the world. It doesn't make him want to hurl, like the mere thought of a bowl of Captain Crunch had this morning. I thought I was going to starve. Turns out morning sickness is no joke.
Luncheon's laptop almost slides right off of Weiying's back, and in the scuffle of Luncheon jerking forward to snatch it before it falls and breaks, Weiying tumbles to the ground, clutching the bag of granola to his chest like a prized possession.
Morning sickness.
If Weiying didn't know better, he'd swear that Luncheon's voice cracks.
Surprise, I'm pregnant,
Weiying says and wiggles his fingers in what he thinks is a spectacular imitation of jazz hands.
God, he needs to stop doing jazz hands when he announces this. It's beginning to become a whole thing.
Who?
Weiying has driven Luncheon to monosyllables and an even more than usual complete lack of inflection.
Neat.
No one important, Weiying says, waving it away like it's nothing, because it is.
Help me up, Luncheon. I'm so delicate and feeble and you knocked me all the way down here. You should help me up.
The reaction is immediate. Weiying has genuinely never seen Luncheon react so quickly, but the moment the words leave his mouth, Luncheon is crouched over him, helping him up with firm but gentle hands and then steering him back to the couch.
Oh my god, did I trigger some weird alpha thing? Like some big bad alpha must protect the poor pregnant omega thing? Oh my god, I did, didn't I?
Weiying asks as Luncheon is literally fluffing the sad deflated cushion of the couch behind Weiying's back.
No,
Luncheon says, in what just might be the worst attempt at lying Weiying has ever heard, and Weiying grew up with Jung Chung.
Wow, Luncheon, for someone whose main facial expression is detached, you are incredibly bad at lying.
Luncheon does not respond.
It's okay, Luncheon,
Weiying says, all wide eyes and an overly serious tone.
I won't judge you for your instincts. This is a no-judgment zone. We even have a sign, see?
He gestures vaguely to the sign that he stuck up their first week in this office. If Luncheon was going to say something or keep staring, Weiying will never know, because there's a knock on the doorframe, and the head of one of Weiying's students popping in.
Sir, I was just wondering if... How many times do I have to tell you to call me Weiying? Sir is Luncheon,
Weiying says, and then there's a slight thump and Luncheon is leaving. Weiying shakes his head fondly at Luncheon.
What a weirdo,
he says, before turning his attention back to his student. There's a bag of ginger chews and a box of crackers left conspicuously on Wei Ying's desk the next day. Wei Ying pops a ginger chew into his mouth and ignores the way his stomach flutters in a way that is very much not related to morning sickness.
I'm getting fat,
Wei Ying says several weeks later, dramatically throwing himself onto the couch in the tiny apartment he shares with Wen Ting, Wen Ning, and Mian Mian.
You're not getting fat. You're barely even showing,
Mian Mian says from where she's sitting on the ground in front of the couch. A mirror and her makeup bag spread out on the coffee table, carefully applying eyeliner. Wei Ying loves Mian Mian. Their former crazy roommate, Xue Yang, going absolutely psycho and then bailing to, like, live with his weird boyfriends or whatever, and Mian Mian happening to need a place at exactly the time Wei Ying and the Wens needed to rush to find someone to take Xue Yang's place so that they could make rent, had really been a boon. He especially loves Mian Mian when she's indulging in his complaining, because Wen Ting, who is buried in a textbook the size of a small mountain, in the spot between the living room and what can only be technically called a kitchen, that they've declared a dining room, is pointedly ignoring him.
I can't button my jeans, he pouts.
He can, technically. They just dig in more than he's used to. He wants to complaining, however. Complaining sparks joy.
Then buy new ones, Wen Ting says, finally acknowledging him. Maybe you should have thought about how you'd have to buy all new clothes while you were getting pregnant and not thinking about how it would affect you and literally everyone else around you.
Wen Ting snaps her textbook shut and stalks to her bedroom, Wei Ying looking helplessly after her. Mian Mian huffs a little noise and pats Wei Ying's knee in a vaguely comforting gesture.
You know how she hates change and doesn't really have the emotional capability to handle these kinds of things.
Wei Ying sighs and rolls off the couch, carefully avoiding hitting Mian Mian with flailing limbs.
I'm gonna go make her have a heart-to-heart. Have a good night at work. I hope you earn crazy tips so that you can keep me in the life I've grown accustomed to.
Wen Ting, love of my life, my best friend in the world, smartest person I know,
Wei Ying says, pleadingly, as he drops onto the edge of Wen Ting's bed in her shoebox bedroom and clasps his hands in front of his chest, going for an over-the-top semblance of innocence.
Wei Ying,
Wen Ting says, viciously highlighting something in her textbook. Wei Ying's a little worried for the safety of the page. He can just picture Wen Ting's highlighter ripping right through it.
You're my best friend, you know?
Wei Ying asks, poking at one of Wen Ting's socked feet in a bid for attention.
Wen Ning, Jiang Cheng, Lan Chan.
Okay, Wen Ning is one day going to become rich and leave us all because the internet loves him. Jiang Cheng is my brother, and I want to climb Lan Chan like a tree and stay there for literally forever, not be his best friend. You're the only person who is simultaneously mean enough and still fond enough of me to be my best friend.
You're pushing it with the fondness, Wen Ting says.
I'm wounded, hurt, destroyed, Wei Ying says, pouting dramatically.
Good.
You're so rude to me. If you were at all into men, you and Jiang Cheng could have a very long, happy life of tormenting me,
Wei Ying says. And then, a little more seriously,
I'm sorry I didn't talk to you before I went off and got knocked up and shook up our whole world. In my defense, it was kind of an accident. There wasn't a lot of time to make a pros versus cons list of how it might affect the balance of the roommate force.
You are the worst at apologies, Wei Ying,
Wen Ting says, but she's softened around the edges, Wei Ying can tell. He's definitely forgiven now. Wei Ying hums his acknowledgement, and they sit in quiet for a long moment, while Wen Ting, much more calmly now, highlights a few things in her textbook. Eventually, Wei Ying stretches out and asks,
Do you think I'll be good at it? The whole mom thing?
I think you're going to forget your kid and the chilies at least twice.
By the time Wei Ying is in his second trimester, morning sickness is a thing of the past, which opens up the new and delightful game Wei Ying likes to call, What Gross Pregnancy Foods Can I Eat to Gross Out My Friends? Yan Li, who is married and disgustingly in love and has been reading up on pregnancy things with Jin Zixuan. Together. They're doing their reading together because they're disgustingly in love and married. So that she can enter the world of planned motherhood is unfortunately unfazed. Wen Ning, who spends hours upon hours a day streaming video games for a living, and therefore eats like an absolute trash gremlin, is also unmoved. Wen-Ting seems more annoyed by the fact that Wei-Ying is trying to achieve something with this than she is disgusted by his food combinations. Jiang-Cheng, however? Jiang-Cheng is an absolute fucking gold mine. The first time Wei-Ying puts sriracha on his ice cream while in Jiang-Cheng's presence, he swears he sees a vein twitch. And sure, maybe Wei-Ying should, like, you know, try to be a better person who doesn't thrive off the discomfort of his own brother, but he's just not. The vein twitch is practically a challenge to keep pushing it. He will make Jiang-Cheng break. What do you think? Any ideas on how to really break him? Wei-Ying asks after explaining all of this to Lan-Chun. Lan-Chun blinks.
We could start a list. I love a good list,
Wei-Ying says, dropping a notepad towards him and writing gross pregnancy food combos to defeat Jiang-Cheng once and for all at the top. He scribbles a couple of items onto the list, musing to himself. Maybe pickles and peanut butter will do it. Even that sounds kind of disgusting to me right now, so it should break Jiang-Cheng with his sensitive sensibilities. Oh my god, though, pickles! Lan-Chun, I need pickles. No, pickled jalapenos. Just an entire jar of pickled jalapenos.
Okay,
Lan-Chun says, and then fucking leaves. Wei-Ying blinks at the empty desk Lan-Chun had literally just been sitting at and then huffs a little and starts the long and arduous process of answering emails. Lan-Chun returns less than half an hour later and drops a bag from a nearby sandwich shop next to Wei-Ying's computer. Inside is what smells an awful lot like an Italian sub, as well as 12 souffle cups filled with pickled jalapenos. 12.
Lan-Chun!
You said you wanted pickled jalapenos. Now you have pickled jalapenos,
Lan-Chun says, like it's that simple, and unwraps his own sandwich.
Wei-Ying knows in his bones that it's a very boring sandwich. Lan-Chun only eats boring food. It's a fatal flaw, and yet somehow Wei-Ying is hopelessly into it.
And the sandwich?
Adequate nutrition is imperative for healthy fetal development,
Lan-Chun says, and Wei-Ying's not sure if he's repeating something he read in a textbook, or if it's just how Lan-Chun talks. It could be both, honestly. Thank you for caring about the development of my fetus, Wei-Ying says, forcing his expression into something wide-eyed and solemn, even though he very much wants to laugh at the phrasing. Then he opens one of the souffle cups and stuffs 3 pickled jalapeno slices directly into his mouth.
Lan-Chun says, and then, you're not very good at caring for yourself. Someone has to.
Lan-Chun, you're teasing me. I can feel it. You look so serious, but you're definitely teasing me. This is unfair, unallowed, illegal.
Wei-Ying says, jabbing a finger at Lan-Chun. Lan-Chun's mouth curves into the barest hint of a smile.
Eat your sandwich.
Yes, Dad, Wei-Ying complains, even as he unwraps his sandwich and bites into it.
My mother,
Lan-Chun says finally, a while later, when Wei-Ying has eaten an entire half of his sandwich. Wei-Ying sits up incredibly straight, his focus entirely on Lan-Chun. Because Lan-Chun never talks about his parents, only his brother and his uncle.
Apparently wanted carrots dipped in peanut butter when she was pregnant with me. It might work just as well on your brother and be less disgusting than the pickle option.
Wei-Ying is, to the best of his abilities, very much not having a full-blown panic attack. His not having a panic attack apparently is not enough, however, because Lan-Chun looks at him with a little worried crease between his eyebrows when he walks in and asks,
Wei-Ying, what's wrong?
Which is, unfortunately, enough that Wei-Ying's eyes immediately fill with tears.
I'm going to have to raise my baby in a box on the side of the road,
Wei-Ying says and snaps his laptop shut and pushes it to the opposite side of his desk where he can pretend it doesn't exist.
Or Kansas, or Ohio, or somewhere like that, which is just as bad.
I'm sure the people of Kansas would argue with that,
Lan-Chun says, and it startles a hitching laugh out of Wei-Ying.
But not the people of Ohio?
Wei-Ying asks, and Lan-Chun gives a serene nod.
God, you're very mean, Lan-Chun, you know that? It's kind of great.
What's wrong?
Lan-Chun asks again, because apparently he's too stubborn to be distracted by Wei-Ying calling him mean. How rude.
I have come to the conclusion that maybe, possibly, perhaps, a baby and roommates who are either in med school, streaming on, like, Twitch or whatever 12 hours a day, or working approximately 8 jobs are not going to be an ideal combination.
Wenting doesn't even like kids. She thinks I'm going to forget the baby at a Denny's, and honestly, when she says it, I think there's hope there. Also, there's no room for a baby in our current setup. Mian Mian sleeps in the living room. My room is the size of a closet. My baby will become one of those babies who sleeps in a dresser drawer, and then what do I do when it gets too big for a dresser drawer? I could put up soundproofing and get a loft bed and put the baby under it, but oh god, I'd have constant panic attacks about the loft bed falling down and crushing its poor soft little skull. Did you know babies have freakishly soft heads? So soft that sometimes when they come out, they just have like a cone-shaped head and have to wear a helmet. Oh my god, its poor little cone head is going to get squished by my loft bed, or I'll have to raise it in Arkansas, where I'll never meet the rest of its family because this is the most expensive place in the fucking...
Wei Ying, Lan Chan says, curling a hand over Wei Ying's shoulder and giving him a little shake, like maybe he said Wei Ying's name multiple times already during Wei Ying's spiral. Wei Ying blinks up at Lan Chan.
Yeah?
Breathe.
Oh, yeah, good idea. Breathing is a good idea,
Wei Ying says, and does his best to, you know, do that. It's somehow easier to manage when Lan Chan rubs a hand soothingly back and forth across Wei Ying's back. I have an extra room, Lan Chan says, when Wei Ying is breathing somewhat normally again and feels slightly less like he's going to vibrate out of his skin from the anxiety of looking at apartment listings. Wei Ying stares. He pinches his arm hard, and it hurts like a bitch, which he guesses is proof he's not dreaming. Then he stares even more at Lan Chan. What?
I said,
Lan Chan pauses, as though gathering his words, and also maybe his patience to deal with Wei Ying. Wei Ying understands. Wei Ying is well aware that he is very difficult, especially, probably, for an alpha, while he's still kind of weeping, frayed under the edges.
I have an extra room, and I do not mind young children.
Okay, but like, this isn't a young child, Lan Chan. This is a baby. And before there's a baby, you'll have to get through months of me, in your space.
That will be preparation enough for when there's a baby,
Lan Chan says, looking just a little bit pleased with his joke, and Wei Ying laughs, kicking his feet. He thinks that the more he reacts like this, over the top and delighted, the more Lan Chan seems to be filled with these smug little jokes. He very much wants to encourage it.
Lan Chan, you can't. You can't just be funny. It's too surprising. I'm too surprised. This can't be good for my poor, feeble body.
I'm sure you'll survive,
Lan Chan says, and Wei Ying tries desperately not to imagine he sounds fond.
Wei Ying makes a show of considering it.
I might,
he says, before sobering, sitting a little straighter.
Lan Chan, you can't just offer for your pregnant cohort to move in with you.
Why?
Lan Chan asks. He sounds a little like he's indulging Wei Ying, like he's already decided how this will go and is just waiting for Wei Ying to catch up. It's kind of insulting. It also just, like, really works for Wei Ying. Unfortunate. He expects to think very thoroughly about Lan Chan sounding indulgent later. Tonight, when it's just him in his lonely bed.
Because,
Wei Ying maybe shouts a little and jabs a finger at Lan Chan, whose eyebrows creep up as though prompting him to continue.
Because you barely know me. Oh, fine, don't give me that look. I know. We see each other practically every day, and I chronically overshare, so actually you know me pretty well, and we are, in fact, actually pretty good friends. But rent.
Aha, rent. I'd have to pay my share of the rent, and I've seen your apartment. There is no way it's cheap, and as we know from my previous display, I'm very, very poor. He's not. Not really. He's not rolling in money because grad school is expensive, and, as he's established, he lives in one of the most expensive places in the entire country. But also, the home he grew up in after the Jiangs took him in is literally across the bridge in the sunset, so it's not like he knows the struggle of poverty intimately or anything. Outside of some brief, possibly traumatic memories from when he was little, after his parents died but before he was placed with the Jiangs, but he tends not to think about those. Theoretically, if everything went to hell, he could go home and prostrate himself before Madame Yu and move back into the room he grew up sharing with Jiang Cheng until he's finished with grad school and has the whole real adult job thing nailed down and stable. Madame Yu would complain about it, but his uncle probably wouldn't mind. And besides, Madame Yu complains about him if he's there and complains about him if he's not there. If the play-by-play is Jiang Cheng texts him of Madame Yu's rants about Wei Ying's lack of filial piety, and how she would expect that even he would respect her enough to show up for dinner once a month in the household that raised him, or anything to go by.
Lunch on, luckily, distracts Wei Ying from spiraling into thoughts of returning to his childhood bedroom, where Jiang Cheng's soccer trophies and Wei Ying's robotics competition award ribbons live, by placing a piece of paper with a number on it in front of Wei Ying.
"The rent,"
he says, which is helpful because Wei Ying had possibly already forgotten what they were talking about. Wei Ying blinks. Wei Ying blinks again. "There is no way your rent is that cheap. Lan Chan, I pay more than that for my closet bedroom. Lan Chan, do not lie to me about your rent."
"My family owns the building,"
Lan Chan says, seeming somehow uncomfortable. Which, good. His family owns an entire building. A nice building. Wei Ying has seen that building. Sure, the Jiangs own their house, but it's a modest house, bought decades ago when homeownership was presumably still an achievable goal. That didn't require the sort of money that takes, like, sacrificing virgins and or all morals and ethics for. Wei Ying does not hold such lofty goals. He assumes, as a millennial, that when he dies it will violate the lease on whatever crappy apartment he lives in at the time, and the bad credit from it will follow him into his next life. "Wait, Lan Chan," Wei Ying says, leaning across his desk to peer at Lan Chan closely. "Are you, like, super rich?" "Oh my god, you're super rich, aren't you? I knew your clothes looked way too nice." They have very strong celebrity and a perfectly fitted $1,000 white t-shirt vibes, despite the fact that I have never seen you in an actual t-shirt.
"We are comfortable,"
Lan Chan says, ignoring Wei Ying's babbling about celebrity t-shirts. "Oh my god, that's exactly what rich people say."
"We have veered away from the original point,"
Lan Chan says, in a blatant attempt to steer the conversation away from Wei Ying mocking him mercilessly for his family's money. Even if Wei Ying hadn't really started the mocking, they know it's coming. Wei Ying knows it's coming. Lan Chan knows it's coming. Wei Ying making dumb jokes about whether or not Lan Chan has a trust fund, and if he spends summers in the Hamptons or wherever the fuck it is Gossip Girl has taught him rich people spend their summers, is going to happen. "Fine."
"Fine?"
"Yes, yes, fine. I will move in with you because that's an absolute steal. You could be being a leech on society and renting that room out for like 5 times that, and I am unashamed of taking advantage of it. But if you decide to kick me out when this thing is born because you haven't properly thought through what the ramifications of living with a newborn would be like, I will have to go live in, like, Missouri. But before I do, I will ugly cry all over you and everything you love." Wei Ying's threats to cry on everything Lan Chan loves turns out to be useless, because when he shows up at Lan Chan's apartment with Wen Ting and Wen Ning to help him move his stuff, Lan Chan sets down a lease and a pen. "Excuse me?" Wei Ying says, and then promptly hides in Lan Chan's, his own, oh god, bathroom, and maybe cries a little bit. Wen Ting only lets him have a few minutes to feel sorry for himself for being an emotional wreck before she knocks sharply on the door and demands to be let in.
"It's not locked,"
Wei Ying says and scrubs at his eyes with the sleeve of his flannel. "You need to get your shit together, Wei Ying," Wen Ting says, and Wei Ying feels his lower lip wobble. "Shit, I didn't mean to. It's not my fault my normal tactics of dealing with you don't work with baby hormones."
"You're the worst at apologies, Wen Ting,"
Wei Ying says with a sniffly little smile.
"Why are we hiding in the bathroom?"
Wen Ting asks, instead of responding like a normal human being, perching herself on the edge of Lan Chan's bathtub.
"I'm having an attack of hormones because this idiot invited me and my unborn baby to live here and he drew up a lease, a legal contract. He can't kick me out even if he wants to."
"I'm failing to see the problem here," Wen Ting says, giving Wei Ying a strange look.
"The problem is that he's perfect,"
Wei Ying wails. "How am I supposed to not fall in love with him while living in his house?" "It's unfortunate. It's tragic. He's fine with Lan Chan just being his friend. He accepts it. He'd hit on Lan Chan exactly twice when they first met, and Lan Chan had made it perfectly clear that he was absolutely not interested. And so Wei Ying had started hooking up with MB Asshole, because an Omega has needs, okay? So, like, he can deal with this. It just feels very tragic and overwrought right now. He's going to blame it on the hormones." "You," Wen Ting tells him very seriously, "are an idiot." "I don't see how insulting me is supposed to help with my situation," Wei Ying says, letting Wen Ting take him by the shoulders and steer him back out of the bathroom. Despite his words, it does help a little bit, actually. 100 points to Wen Ting for her creative means of fixing Wei Ying.
Weiying signs the lease. He moves his stuff into the bedroom Lan Chan has said is his. He latches onto Wen Ning and hugs him tightly and refuses to let go for a solid 5 minutes.
An Ning, I will miss you the absolute most. Never forget me or the pure and true bond that we share,
he tells him, clinging a little, and Wen Ning gently pats at his back.
You're going to see us tomorrow,
Wen Ting says, removing Weiying's octopus arms from her brother.
Oh, yeah, you're right,
Weiying says, deflating only a moment before he perks back up and throws his arms around Wen Ting this time.
Wen Ting, I'm going to miss you being mean to me so much.
Weiying.
Wen Ting is not, historically, a hugger.
Honor the bonds of our friendship by letting your poor, poor pregnant friend hug you, Wen Ting.
It'll only be for a second. You can do it. It won't kill you, I promise. It might. You don't know that it won't. I'm the one getting a medical degree.
Weiying huffs out a laugh and presses his face into Wen Ting's shoulder, breathing in her steady, neutral scent for a moment, as she somewhat awkwardly hugs him back. Finally, having sympathy on his poor, poor friend, he lets go and steps back.
Okay, I'm done now. Thanks. For helping me move and also for, like, not being mad that I left you needing to find a new roommate.
Please, we would have kicked you out the second the kid was born,
Wen Ting says, and Weiying grins because it's a lie. It's a big, fat, giant lie. The kind of lie that can be seen from space. Weiying loves his friends so much.
Uh-huh, sure you would. Now get out of mine and Lan Chan's apartment.
The bed in Lan Chan's guest room turned Weiying's room is, Weiying is pretty sure, actually magical. The first night he piles blankets and pillows high and curls up in the center of them. He sleeps like the dead, and when he wakes up, it's to the smell of something delicious wafting into his room. Weiying stumbles from the bed, dragging a comforter around his shoulders with him, and follows his nose with his eyes still mostly closed. A pair of hands on his shoulder steer him into a chair, and he slumps over the table, yawning into his comforter. When he finally opens his eyes fully, there's a plate of food in front of him.
Lan Chan!
Weiying exclaims, delighted, and digs in.
This is too much. You're too good a friend. Lan Chan, I'm going to end up spoiled. I'll start expecting delicious hot breakfasts in the morning, and then when they're not there, I'll be bereft. How will I ever survive?
Lan Chan says, which Weiying takes to mean, eat your breakfast, Weiying. So he does. It goes on, more or less, like this for a while. Lan Chan consistently makes sure Weiying is eating, and Weiying enjoys his magical bed. And he especially enjoys the washer-dryer just off the kitchen. That means he doesn't have to drag all his clothes to a laundromat every couple of weeks.
Is this what it feels like to be an adult?
Weiying asks his bedding, and the universe at large, as he shoves it into the washing machine.
Not having to buy a tiny packet of dryer sheets out of a vending machine because you forgot them at home? Getting to lay on your couch instead of sitting on an awkward little bench while you wait? Amazing. Incredible. This is the life.
Lan Chan makes a vague skeptical noise where he's standing in front of the stove, stir-frying what will surely be a balanced and nutritious dinner. Weiying had discovered him Googling nutrition for pregnant omegas a week ago, and now he has way too many facts about how Weiying needs things like iron and folic acid and all of that. Weiying had, at one point, when faced with these facts, grabbed his Fruit Loops from top of the fridge and shoved the box into Lan Chan's face, insisting that,
"They're fortified, Lan Chan, it's like taking a vitamin."
But Lan Chan hadn't seemed convinced.
"It is, Lan Chan. It's the life,"
Weiying insists, moving further into the kitchen once he's started the washing machine and leaning against the counter on his elbows to watch the rice cooker, as though he can speed its cooking along with Lan Chan's through the power of his will alone. It doesn't work, of course, which is terrible because it means Weiying has to be patient. Madame Yu had told him when he was at monthly dinner last that he'd need to develop patience to deal with raising a child the same as she had to with him. And while at the time Weiying had been mostly focused on how impressive it was that he hadn't responded with, "That was you being patient?" he is maybe, now, realizing that she's possibly correct. He imagines, for a brief instance, himself and a tiny child, staring impatiently at Lan Chan while he cooks, and then has to very firmly erase Lan Chan from that picture,
Eventually, Wei Ying will move out, and Lan Chan will find someone nice to settle down with and have cute babies of his own with, and he will, judging by how over-the-top he is with Wei Ying, who is only a friend, take insanely good care of them. The best care of them. Out of this world, unbelievable care. And Wei Ying will embrace single motherhood and probably learn the patience Madame Yu was talking about when it comes to dealing with his kid, but probably not when it comes to dinner.
Make the food cook faster, Lan Chan,
Wei Ying says, pressing his hands together and giving a very exaggerated pout.
The baby and I are starving, famished, withering away into nothingness. Help this poor Omega who has not eaten for 40 days and 40 nights. Whoa, Lan Chan, whoa.
Lan Chan, who has seemingly learned that engaging Wei Ying when he gets like this will surely just make him keep going, does not give any kind of verbal response because he's a giant spoilsport. Though Wei Ying is sure for a very brief moment, before he convinces himself otherwise, that he isn't imagining the fond look on Lan Chan's face. Wei Ying isn't quite sure how it happens, but somehow Lan Chan ends up taking Wei Ying to his ultrasound.
Well, completely unexplainable. This is good, because Wei Ying is vibrating with a horrible mix of excitement and anxiety.
Then Lan Chan lets him chatter at him through the drive there, and the possibly 10 minutes, possibly 7 hours, Wei Ying could not possibly say because time is meaningless at this juncture, that they spend sitting in the waiting room. It takes an inordinate amount of time, and also somehow no time at all, before he's in a tiny room and there's cold gel being spread on his stomach, and then...
Oh,
he says, his eyes fixed on the screen. He reaches out blindly, grabbing onto Lan Chan's hand.
That's a baby. I mean, I knew it was a baby, but I'd kind of been thinking about them as like an amorphous blob. They've got a nose. Look at their nose, Lan Chan.
It's a very good nose,
Lan Chan agrees, and Wei Ying preens a little bit.
He made that nose. He made that whole baby, all by himself.
Technically, he guesses, there was another person involved in the baby's creation, but Wei Ying is absolutely taking full credit for this. He deserves this win, okay?
Everything looks very good, including the nose,
his doctor, who insists on being called Dr. Claudia, says brightly. Wei Ying is sure that if he were able to look away from the screen for even a second, he'd see her smiling. She smiles a lot. Her smile is very bright and her hair very shiny. And at first she'd reminded him deeply of the overly perfect kind of girls in high school that Shui Yang sold his Alderaal to, but he'd gotten past that impression pretty quickly. And now, a few months, several appointments, and a half dozen viewings of pictures of her wife and children on her phone later, Wei Ying's become pretty fond of her.
Do you want to know the gender?
Wei Ying has a whole ramble on how gender is a scam that was initially spurred on by Jiang Cheng asking, "What if it's a boy?" when Wei Ying bought a tiny, adorable little pink tutu only a few weeks into the pregnancy, because he absolutely could not resist it. Still, despite his well-worn tangent, there's curiosity, so he doesn't hesitate to say, "Yes, absolutely, please." They're quiet as she moves the wand around over Wei Ying's stomach, the moment drawing out. Wei Ying still has a tight hold on Lan Chan's hand, and he considers, momentarily, letting Lan Chan have his hand back, because surely he wants it back, before Lan Chan's other hand joins the one holding on to Wei Ying's, squeezing his hand between them, and Wei Ying gives up that thought entirely.
Congratulations, it looks like you're having a girl.
Oh, wow. It suddenly feels very, very real. It's not like it hadn't felt real before. It had certainly felt real enough when Wei Ying was unable to eat most things without wanting to hurl, or when he was moving in with Lan Chan. It's just that now it feels even more real, like when you know, theoretically, that the jigsaw puzzle you're working on will become the Eiffel Tower, but it's not until halfway through that you know how it will all come together. Except in this case, the Eiffel Tower is a baby. A baby girl. Oh, wow. After, when Wei Ying is curled up in the passenger seat of Lan Chan's car, he decides that he's very glad he let Lan Chan convince him they should take his car. He's happy, filled with hope and excitement, and no small amount of elation. But he's also overwhelmed, and the thought of the sights and sounds and smells that would accompany a bus ride home is terrible.
Can you take me somewhere?
Where do you want to go?
Lan Chan asks, casting a glance away from the road and towards Wei Ying.
Anywhere out of the city,
Wei Ying says, and Lan Chan nods, turns on his blinker, and they wind their way toward the freeway. Lan Chan drives them across the bridge, and Wei Ying raises his eyebrows as he watches the San Francisco skyline get ever closer.
We're just passing through,
Lan Chan says, the slightest edge of defensiveness lacing his voice.
I wasn't doubting you,
Wei Ying says, and pats at Lan Chan's shoulder before he slumps a little into his seat, shifting until he can prop his feet up on the dash.
If we got a big one and the bridge collapsed, would you want to be on the bottom or the top?
I'd prefer not to be on the bridge at all,
Lan Chan says.
Put your feet down, it's not safe.
Okay, yeah, obviously, but like, if you had to choose.
If I was on the bridge, then I wouldn't have a choice, would I?
Lan Chan says, and Wei Ying narrows his eyes at him because Lan Chan is being purposefully obtuse.
But then Lan Chan removes one hand from the steering wheel, curls it over Wei Ying's ankle, and shoves until Wei Ying drops his feet with a grumble and sits properly.
Semi-properly. His feet are on the floor, at least.
You're no fun,
Wei Ying says, pouting dramatically. As though proving Wei Ying's point, Lan Chan hums his agreement instead of responding with words. They're fully out of the city when Wei Ying realizes where they're heading and declares that he wants Taco Bell. Lan Chan, because he has become one of Wei Ying's very best friends, seems to understand exactly what Wei Ying means, and shortly after they're pulling up in front of the wood structure of a Taco Bell with the beach spreading out beyond it. Once inside, they order, and Lan Chan, the jerk, pays before Wei Ying can even think to argue. He is perfectly capable of arguing after, however, which is why he complains that,
Lan Chan, I could have paid. It's practically the cheapest food ever,
while picking out entire handfuls of hot sauce packets while they wait. Lan Chan doesn't even acknowledge his very valid argument, instead swooping over to pick up their tray when it's ready, and then following Wei Ying out onto the patio and to a table.
You're very stubborn, Lan Chan. Did you know that?
Wei Ying asks, waving a packet of hot sauce at him.
I've been told,
Lan Chan says, watching Wei Ying with the same sort of look he'd give something very bizarre, while Wei Ying meticulously rips open 6 packets of Diablo hot sauce, unwraps his burrito, unfolds the tortilla, then squeezes all of them into the burrito, folds it back up again, and takes a huge bite.
Oh, good. I just thought you should know,
Wei Ying says, grinning. It's a quiet day, midweek and overcast and a little bit chilly. There's a few people scattered across the beach, a couple walking their dog, far enough away that Wei Ying doesn't quite panic at the sight of it, and a few figures out in the water surfing. It's nice, calming even after the excitement and exhilaration and anxiety of his appointment. Lan Chan takes a bite of his potato taco. Someone on the beach shrieks in what sounds like delight as they're chased into the freezing cold ocean. There's a bird hopping on a nearby table, seeking out bits of food left behind. Nie Huaisang would know the exact name of it, Wei Ying is sure, but Jiang Cheng once got annoyed and called them the rats of the sea, purely to piss Nie Huaisang off, because the two were in the midst of a fight, and now Wei Ying's brain will never refer to them as anything else.
Thank you,
Wei Ying says eventually when he's finished with his burrito and is starting on his crunch wrap, squeezing Diablo sauce onto it before every bite.
You know, for coming with me today. For everything, really. You're a really good friend, Lan Chan.
You don't have to thank me,
Lan Chan says, and Wei Ying hums a little, flicks a piece of lettuce towards Lan Chan, and says,
I know, but I'm still going to.
When they're finished, Lan Chan gathers up their trash, deposits it in the trash can, and their tray in its spot above, and then they wander along the beach. It's nice. Lan Chan lets Wei Ying curl his arm through Lan Chan's and carries Wei Ying's shoes when Wei Ying complains about sand getting into them, and seems perfectly content to let Wei Ying lead him around aimlessly despite the fact that he knows Lan Chan has an early class tomorrow and probably has a whole stack of papers to grade waiting at home. They end up sitting on the beach while the sun makes its slow crawl down across the sky, lighting the world up in orange and blue and pink. Wei Ying leans against Lan Chan, his head against his shoulder, breathing in the smell of sandalwood and something that's uniquely Lan Chan.
Gosh, you smell good,
Wei Ying mumbles into Lan Chan's shoulder,
and above him there's a strangled-sounding noise.
Thank you, Lan Chan says, sounding a little strange.
But he distracts Wei Ying before he can pester him about it by being an absolute fuddy-duddy and saying,
We should go home. It's getting cold and you have an early class.
Wei Ying very briefly thinks about being pouty and calling Lan Chan boring for his respect for what he calls healthy sleep hygiene. And Wei Ying calls, I can sleep when I'm dead, Lan Chan. The warm feeling that suffuses his entire being at the thought of home wins out, however, and he doesn't even complain a little bit as Lan Chan leads him home. There are adjustments to be made when one starts living with someone else. Wei Ying is sure of this. He keeps expecting the hard ones to pop up. For Lan Chan to get more annoyed with him than the little sigh he does when he comes in to find Wei Ying surrounded by papers and eating cereal straight out of the box on Lan Chan's nice couch. For Lan Chan to indicate somehow, some way, that he's growing tired of Wei Ying constantly in his space and needs some time alone. It never happens. In fact, it doesn't even happen the times it should. Like when Lan Chan's brother and his husband come over for dinner. Wei Ying is fully prepared to retreat to his room so that Lan Chan can do the whole family dinner thing. But when he goes to make his escape attempt, Lan Chan gives him a strange look and asks,
Where are you going?
Like Wei Ying's the one being weird, so, well, he figures he might as well stick around. Lan Huan looks like a somewhat more visibly pleasant, older version of Lan Chan, which is the sort of thing that feels deeply unfair. No singular family should be allowed to create a bunch of hyper-attractive, almost but not quite clones. Wei Ying is going to have to fight the universe about it. Meanwhile, Lan Huan's husband, Meng Yao, is like the perfect Omega. He's small and well-dressed and wears a wedding ring the size of a fucking dinner plate. He has dimples. He brings a bottle of probably very expensive wine and a bottle of sparkling apple cider because Lan Chan tells us you're expecting and is, at first glance, perfect in the way that makes Wei Ying, who is hurtling face forward toward single parenthood at roughly the speed of a jet plane and is wearing a t-shirt that he bought in high school that is now definitely more holes than shirt, feel, you know, slightly inadequate. Wei Ying is, in general, pretty comfortable with who he is as a human being and an Omega, but he doesn't think he can be blamed for any doubts when faced with this kind of thing.
You didn't tell me they were perfect,
Wei Ying hisses at Lan Chan when Meng Yao and Lan Huan have disappeared into the kitchen to, like, chill the wine or something like that. Lan Chan looks deeply confused for several seconds before he pulls out his phone, taps at it for a few seconds, and then says,
This is from their joint bachelor party.
With a casualness that belies the fact that he's sharing the sort of picture that, if Wei Ying had something similar of Jiang Cheng, would be used for a variety of purposes ranging from blackmailing to pasting it in a scrapbook so that he could pull it out and reminisce until Jiang Cheng threatened to strangle him. It has the exact effect Lan Chan probably counted on, however, because there is no way Wei Ying can think of these people as, like, Instagram-level perfection when he's staring at a picture of the two of them so clearly and sloppily drunk. Meng Yao is wearing a tiara that sits crookedly on his head and a sash that says, Getting Married, and is sitting in a besotted and flushed and very shirtless Lan Huan's lap. Lan Chan flips to another picture and serenely says,
This is my brother's home.
The photo in question is, ostensibly, of a small, fluffy white dog, sitting very primly on a very white, very nice couch. But above it, on the wall, is a deliberately worn wood sign that says Live, Laugh, Love, in looping cursive like it's straight out of someone's Pinterest board.
This is a photo of my brother on spring break with Meng Yao and their friend. You will note he somehow missed sunscreen on an entire half of his body,
Lan Chan says next, and then,
This is a photo of Lan Huan crying over the end of the movie Marley and Me.
And then,
This is a photo of my brother scrapbooking in his craft room.
Wait, Wei Ying says, no longer able to hold it in. Do you just, like, have an entire folder on your phone of things to embarrass your brother with?
Who would ever do such a thing?
Lan Chan asks, the picture of innocence. Wei Ying would like to note that this is very much not an answer. Before he can pester Lan Chan about it, however, Lan Huan and Meng Yao are back in the living room, and Lan Chan is shoving his phone back into his pocket while Meng Yao is narrowing his eyes suspiciously at Lan Chan for the briefest of moments, before his expression smooths out into a perfect smile, dimples and all. After that, the rest of the evening goes smoothly. Lan Huan makes a series of well-meaning and completely innocuous comments that make Lan Shan's ears turn red. Meng Yao oscillates with seeming ease between placid niceties and sharp, watchful expressions. The food is delicious and ordered from somewhere expensive, and Wen Weiying forces Lan Shan to try some of his food directly from his fork because it's amazing. He has to try it, and Lan Shan allows it. The silence that follows feels like Weiying should literally be hearing crickets. When they leave, Meng Yao pauses and gives Weiying an appraising look. "Try to get him to elope before you have to meet his uncle. Trust me, it will be worth it," Meng Yao says, and then disappears out the front door, to where Lan Shan is walking Lan Huan to the elevator and out to their car before Weiying can respond. "What the fuck?" Weiying thinks. "What the fuck?" Weiying says aloud, staring at the empty doorway in front of him. Weiying wakes up, somewhere early into the start of his third trimester, feeling hot and unsettled and unreasonably irritatingly horny. It's unfair. It's unfair that he can feel like he's the size of a house, has terrible heartburn, and would like to be dicked down on just, like, an absolutely unholy level. If he didn't love his baby so much already, he'd fight her the second she came out for everything she's done to him to this point. It helps not at all that Lan Chun is, well, Lan Chun, with his big hands and his tiny hidden smiles that at times feel like they're just for Weiying, and the way he's always there and wants to help. It's terrible. It's unhelpful. Lan Chan seems to notice his irritation, even if he doesn't know the exact cause. And in his current very unhelpful because it's so damn helpful way, he piles blankets on the couch until they're a comfortable nest. And he peels tangerines and sets them near Weiying with a bottle of water because he's been on Weiying's case about hydration lately. And then, most unbearably of all, he goes to leave. Lan Chan, Weiying says, stopping him before he gets too far, and only realizing belatedly, when Lan Chan's eyes have landed on him, steady and watchful, that he hadn't thought of what he was going to say. Oh well, Weiying can come up with words on the fly with the best of them. "You're such a good friend, Lan Chan. You know that, right? You're the best friend a guy could ask for." Lan Chan's left eyebrow twitches. It's an interesting little tick that Weiying has noticed since they started spending even more time together, though he has yet to figure out the exact cause of it. "You should come enjoy the nest you made as a reward for being such a good friend." It feels bold somehow. Weiying is no stranger to the fact that he is, at times, overly affectionate. And he's been touching Lan Chan since the day they met, not so fresh-faced, brand-new grad students. This feels different, though. An invitation instead of him foisting his affections on Lan Chan. Lan Chan hovers for just long enough that Weiying isn't sure whether he'll accept or flee to his bedroom like had surely been his original intention. But then something in the stiffness of his shoulder seems to relax, and he crosses the living room and joins Weiying on the couch. "Hi," Weiying says, and then proceeds to fret with the blankets until they're just right around them, before he settles more or less halfway across Lan Chan's lap. This is, unfortunately and unsurprisingly, a very effective cure for the irritation that has been bubbling in Weiying since he woke up, even if it does absolutely nothing for the twisting wave of want in his gut.
"The books say that this is normal," Lan Chan says eventually, gesturing sort of vaguely with one hand, to encompass Weiying and the nesting and the clinging. The other hand is spread across Weiying's back, warm and big and attached to the man who has read baby books so that he can help with his friend's surprise pregnancy.
"The irritable nesting part or the irritatingly horny part?"
Weiying asks into Lan Chan's shoulder and feels the exact moment when he goes stiff. He pulls back, and yeah, there it is, those bright pink lawn ears. Weiying wants to bite them. Just a little nibble. Surely it wouldn't do that much harm. Aside from, you know, the harm of damaging a really great friendship and leaving them in an incredibly awkward living situation.
"Both,"
Lan Chan says finally, when it's reached a point where Weiying is getting sure he won't answer.
"The books say that both are normal."
"I can't believe you read baby books for me, Lan Chan. You do so much for me. Too much,"
Weiying says.
"You're such a good fr—"
And then Lan Chan cuts him off by kissing him. It's quick, only lasting a moment before Lan Chan pulls back to say,
Wei Ying, if you say that I'm such a good friend one more time, I'm going to.
This time it's Wei Ying who cuts Lan Chan off. He doesn't think, just grabs hold of the collar of Lan Chan's shirt and pulls him in until they're kissing again. The angle off at first, until Lan Chan shifts a little, gets a hand in Wei Ying's hair, and oh, that's good. That's very good. They're kissing, and it's good, and they're kissing. Wei Ying is great with this new development.
Oh my god, Lan Chan, do you like me?
Wei Ying asks when he pulls back to catch his breath.
Lan Chan makes a pained face. Wei Ying.
Oh my god, Lan Chan, you do like me.
Wei Ying scrambles into Lan Chan's lap, a leg thrown to either side of his.
How embarrassing for you. When did this start? Is this new? Oh my god, did me being a poor, down-on-their-luck Omega awaken something in you? It's very understandable if...
Lan Chan places one hand over Wei Ying's mouth to shut him up, and Wei Ying licks the palm of his hand to be obnoxious. This does not seem to faze Lan Chan in the slightest, the quiet lasting for just long enough that Wei Ying can start to doubt his assumption here. Maybe Lan Chan doesn't like him. Maybe Lan Chan is just being a good friend and giving Wei Ying a little action because he said he was horny. Maybe...
It's not new,
Lan Chan says, finally, bringing Wei Ying's inner meltdown to a screeching halt.
Huh. Why didn't you say something?
Wei Ying says, or, well, tries to say. It comes out muffled around Lan Chan's hand, but Lan Chan seems to get the gist.
Wei Ying, I didn't think I'd been particularly subtle,
Lan Chan says, and at Wei Ying's incredulous look continues.
And I didn't want to impose my feelings on you when you're going through such a major life change.
Wei Ying makes an impatient gesture until Lan Chan removes his hand from his mouth and he can speak again.
Okay. First off, you didn't want to impose? Impose? What the fuck, Lan Chan?
He shoves at Lan Chan's shoulder just a little, just to show how much he thinks that's a ridiculous concept.
Second, you can't be subtle with me. I'm an idiot. I'm so dumb, Lan Chan. You know this. I'm such an idiot that I got knocked up.
Wei Ying.
Lan Chan's eyes are narrowed, and the way that Wei Ying has learned means he thinks Wei Ying is being a little bit more self-deprecating than Lan Chan thinks is warranted. But Wei Ying plows on.
And thirdly and most importantly, why are we not kissing right now? We should definitely be kissing right now. We've established your feelings for me and my feelings for you, so we should definitely be kissing. Or more than kissing.
Yes, more than kissing would be great. He can think of numerous more than kissing things he'd love to do. Wei Ying had not been kidding about the irritatingly horny part.
We have not,
Lan Chan says, instead of doing the proper thing and plowing full steam ahead with Wei Ying's kissing and or possibly more than kissing plans.
Huh?
We have not established your feelings for me.
There's a certain lack of surety there, like he really doesn't know, that makes Wei Ying feel very fond and very warm, and he has to. Kiss Lan Chan one more time, a fleeting peck of a thing, because he cannot get distracted by much more right now.
In that case, I think we should establish that I like you very much. So much. Just, like, a truly incredible amount. An amount so embarrassing that you should really shut me up for my own sake before I keep talking about it, because I totally will. I know I will. You know I will. Astronauts in space know I will. It'll be
Lan Chan, the very merciful soul that he is, chooses that moment to shut Wei Ying up. With his mouth. And then, after that, with a hand on Wei Ying's dick. All things considered, it's a very successful way of getting Wei Ying to stop talking. Wei Ying had thought that the bed in his own room had been great. But Lan Chan's bed? Lan Chan's bed is actually magical. He'd expected, for whatever reason, that Lan Chan would sleep on something hard and uncomfortable, the kind of bed Madame Yu kept in the guest room for when the more old-school aunties and uncles came into the country for a visit. But instead, it's like sleeping on a fucking cloud, and Lan Chan doesn't even so much as complain when Wei Ying steals most of the pillows to squish under and pile around him until he can get comfortable. He does, however, buy Wei Ying one of those fancy pregnancy pillows about 3 days in, and frankly, it's a game-changer. Wei Ying has never been more comfortable in his life. He's keeping this thing even after the baby. He foresees many, many years in a happy, stable relationship with this pillow. Lun Chan's bed is also magical in the sense that when Lun Chan wakes up freakishly early in the morning, he places a little kiss on Wei Ying's brow and tells him to go back to sleep, which Wei Ying very much does. Some amount of time later, Wei Ying blinks his eyes open to Lun Chan, returned from whatever his morning routine consists of. Wei Ying suspects he'll never know exactly what it entails, because that would mean waking up at a time that is, in his humble and incredibly correct opinion, a little bit evil. Lun Chan is damp and wrapped in a towel, fresh out of the shower, and Wei Ying shamelessly watches him getting dressed, delights in the little crease Lun Chan gets between his eyebrows when he decides on jewelry. Wei Ying must drift off again, because the next thing he's aware of is Lun Chan crouched in front of him. He's fully clothed, which is unfortunate, but he's so beautiful that Wei Ying is pretty sure it has to be illegal to be that way this early in the morning, so maybe it's for the better.
Illegal,
Wei Ying says and tugs at the front of Lun Chan's hair, where it can't be contained by the tiny, adorable baby ponytail he'd pulled the rest of it in today.
I have to go,
Lun Chan says, and he looks so very fond that Wei Ying is filled with no small amount of dismay that he's managed to go months and months without noticing that exact look on Lun Chan's face.
Also illegal,
Wei Ying complains.
I'll be sure to alert the authorities, Lun Chan says very seriously.
I'll come visit you when you're in jail for this very serious crime,
Wei Ying says just as seriously, and then spend several more moments staring at Lun Chan and being stared back at, like some sort of lovesick fool.
Okay, you can go. Bye. Your hair is doing a thing that's very cute, and if you stay even a moment longer, I'll have to kidnap you so that you can't leave.
When Lun Chan does finally leave, a process that takes several more minutes because Wei Ying, somehow on accident and not at all of his own volition, turns a goodbye kiss into a goodbye makeout session. Wei Ying spreads himself across Lun Chan's bed and stares at the ceiling in absolute disbelief that this is his life right now. The position makes his hips twinge so he can't stay in it for long, but it seems like the correct way to question how one's life is so good. He thinks he may be smiling a little bit like an idiot. He has absolutely nothing to do today. Well, that's only half true. Technically, he has assignments to work on before the rapidly approaching end of the semester, and papers to grade, and he has an email to respond to from his advisor, so technically, he has things to do. But it's practically a lazy day. He can take a moment to enjoy the fact that his idiocy somehow got him here. Eventually, he has to get up because the baby is definitely sitting on his bladder, and then he helps himself to some of the fruit that Lun Chan keeps cut up in the fridge because Lun Chan is a secret lover of snacks. Then he returns to bed, props his phone up on the mound of blankets beside him, and FaceTimes Nie Huaisang.
I'm not sure how, but I think I might have skipped the dating phase and the honeymoon phase and hurtled straight into the domestic bliss part,
he says as soon as Nie Huaisang's face fills the screen. Despite the fact that Wei Ying knows he was up until the wee hours of the night before, because he sent Wei Ying a stupid meme at like 3:30 a.m., he looks freakishly awake. Wei Ying hates him a little for it.
That makes sense, considering you already went through both those stages without realizing it. The dating phase was before you moved in with him, and the honeymoon was after,
Huaisung says very patiently, like Wei Ying is a very dumb child.
Rude,
Wei Ying says, and then sadly to his stomach. You'll learn soon that every single one of my friends is so mean to me.
Your brother thinks I'm very nice,
Huaisung says with a waggle of his eyebrows that makes him look ridiculous. And Wei Ying makes a noise like he's dying.
You can't talk about my brother like that. He's an innocent baby lamb.
Wait, are you in Lan Chan's room?
Huaisang asks instead of answering Wei Ying, which actually is for the best, Wei Ying sure of it. He does not want confirmation either way regarding his baby brother's innocence.
Show me around. I thought I'd get to see his inner sanctum once you moved in, but you've only posted pictures from your room in the kitchen.
Maybe I'm trying to respect Lun Chan's privacy, Huaisang. You ever think of that?
Wei Ying asks, even as he rolls out of bed and starts on a very dramatic apartment tour. So, yes, he's skipped, or more likely missed, the other stages and is in domestic bliss. It's fine. It's whatever. It's great. He doesn't ever officially move into Lanchan's room, but he starts sleeping there every night, and his mess of chargers has mysteriously relocated to the bedside table on Wei Ying's side of the bed, and his clothes into one half of Lanchan's closet, and, oh yeah, he has his own side of the bed. Which is why it shouldn't be surprising when Lanchan, on a perfectly innocent Tuesday morning, says,
"We should set up the nursery."
Wei Ying squints at Lanchan from the couch.
"Huh?"
"The nursery," Lanchan clarifies. "The room where a baby commonly sleeps. We should set it up soon."
Wei Ying scratches his nose, arranging thoughts in his head until what Lanchan is saying makes sense.
"The nursery, as in my room?"
"Yes, the spare room."
"Because I live in your room?"
Wei Ying tries, blinking owlishly up at Lanchan.
"Yes, our room,"
Lanchan corrects, and there's a stubbornness there that Wei Ying started to detect about certain things lately. Like, now that he's allowed to, he's going to stubbornly grasp onto all the things he wants with Wei Ying. Wei Ying definitely doesn't feel some kind of way about that. And that some kind of way he definitely doesn't feel is definitely not warm adoration. He swears. It is. It's the warmest of adoration. Wei Ying is pretty sure he's going to burn up from the inside out about it.
"Okay,"
Wei Ying says, and then,
okay, yes, we should probably set up the nursery soon, so that she doesn't end up having to sleep in a dresser drawer.
Which is how Wei Ying ends up at Home Depot, comparing paint samples that mostly look the same, but slightly different, with Lanchan.
"Can you even paint your apartment? It's an apartment,"
Wei Ying had asked, and Lanchan had given Wei Ying a flat look, until Wei Ying remembered that of course he could. Lanchan could do whatever he wanted to his apartment, because Lanchan's family owned the building. Because Wei Ying's boyfriend...
Boyfriend?
Boyfriend? Is comfortable.
"Oh my god, you're my boyfriend,"
Wei Ying had said next. And Lanchan had sighed the sigh of the truly long-suffering and nodded his head very seriously until Wei Ying had to kiss his cheeks over and over again.
"So what do we think?"
Wei Ying asks, holding out a handful of yellow swatches.
"Rite of spring, upbeat, or unmellow yellow?"
"I think you're trying to blind your own child before it can even see properly,"
Lanchan says and plucks unmellow yellow from Wei Ying's hands and discards it.
"Rude,"
Wei Ying says, and then, grabbing an even brighter shade off the rack.
"I can't believe it, but I think I'm in love with..."
He pauses to read the swatch.
"Extreme yellow. Yeah, this one is great. Can't you imagine? Just a whole entire room of it?"
"Wei Ying,"
Lanchan says and looks at Wei Ying.
"Fine, fine. Extreme yellow is out. It kind of gives me a migraine anyway."
"Upbeat is nice,"
Lanchan says after a moment, sounding like he's attempting to be carefully neutral and bend to whatever Wei Ying wants, which is laughable considering he'd vetoed unmellow yellow with extreme prejudice.
"Really? I kind of thought you'd be into, like, all the very slightly tinted but still mostly white colors or something, considering your, well, everything."
Wei Ying gestures to encompass Lanchan in his very soft, very pale blue top and his wide-legged white pants. Lanchan has a very clear vibe, a carefully curated aesthetic, if you will, and it applies to his home just as much as it does to his fashion sense. Wei Ying wonders a little what Lanchan is going to do when a messy, grubby little baby comes into his pristine life. It's Wei Ying's kid, and they haven't exactly discussed what Lanchan's role will be in all of this, but regardless, there is no amount of Tide pens that can protect white pants from an infant.
"If it was for me, yes, but it's for the baby,"
Lanchan says, like it's as simple as that, and then he steers Wei Ying towards the counter to get the paint. Wei Ying attempts to get Lanchan to let him help paint the baby's room. Lanchan shuts the door in his face because he's kind of a dick, and also probably because he knows better than to let Wei Ying sink his teeth into an argument about it. Wei Ying attempts to furiously Google for proof that painting a room will be perfectly safe for him and his spawn, but even the articles that are like, "Yeah, sure, go for it," also claim that not enough research has been done, and frankly, there's no conclusive evidence either way, is not enough for Wei Ying to build a foolproof argument on, let alone one that will sway someone as stubborn as Lanchan. So Weying concedes and calls his sister and whines to her about how fat his ankles have gotten and how his hips hurt and lets her comfort him about it for a solid 45 minutes. 2 days later, Lan Chan finally lets him in. Weying promptly bursts into tears. Lan Chan does a very good imitation of a deer in headlights at the sight of a crying Weying.
"I'll redo it," Lan Chan says immediately, vehemently,
which unfortunately just serves the purpose of making Weying cry harder.
"Oh my god, no, shut up, Lan Chan, it's fine, it's perfect. I can't believe you did this, it looks so good, I'm just..."
He gestures to himself in a way that's supposed to mean pregnant and ridiculous and overwhelmed. He thinks Lan Chan understands, because Lan Chan is a saint. Lan Chan painted the baby's room the sunshiny yellow Weying had chosen, and put together the crib, and dragged in a rocking chair without Weying even noticing. There's even a mobile hung cheerily above the crib. Clouds and stars and little adorable bunnies hung together.
"You're just Lan Chan. You're really great. Did you know that?"
he finally says, feeling helpless to say anything else. It's okay, though, because Lan Chan smiles, a small little curve of his mouth, and Weying's heart is suddenly too full for him to possibly say anything more or do anything other than wrap his arms tight around Lan Chan and squeeze. Labor, it turns out, is a bitch and a half. He can see now why Omegas in movies are always screaming at their alpha partners because, wow, he would really like someone to blame for this other than himself. Maybe one day, many years from now, when he's forgotten how miserable this is, he'll let Lan Chan knock him up if he's still around, purely so that Wei Ying can do the whole yelling thing.
Oh wow, this sucks. This sucks, this sucks, this sucks. Why do people do this? This sucks.
He complains at some point, and Lan Chan moves closer, lets him take his hand and squeeze it until the bones grind together and Lan Chan makes a pained face. Weying would feel a little guilty if he wasn't the one giving birth. There's a ridiculously cheerful nurse who checks on him periodically, who asks Weying things like, "Oh wow, this is your first time, huh? Exciting, exciting!" And cheerfully asks Lan Chan, "I bet you're excited to become a dad, huh?" And Weying opens his mouth to say, "Oh, no, no, Lan Chan's not the dad, he's just the best." Because wow, wow, that's a lot of responsibility to put on a guy who's been dating him for like 2 minutes. Except Lan Chan responds with an affirmative humming noise and agrees that yes, it is very exciting. He's been looking forward to meeting the baby. And Weying has to put a pin in that. He's putting a very big pin in that. The biggest of pins, in demanding elaboration from Lan Chan and thinking about what he thinks and how he feels about that. Good? He feels good about it, he thinks. Because wow, he is not even going to try to process it until the 6.5-pound bowling ball he's been carrying around for the last 9 months is out of him. Yeah, that shit can wait. "She's so small," Weying says, and then turns an accusing gaze on the tiny bundle all wrapped up in pink in his arms. "You did not feel this small coming out of me, you know?"
"You did very good,"
Lan Chan says, and Weying wants to preen a little, wants to drag Lan Chan into the bed next to him and wrap himself and the baby up in his scent until he can no longer smell the antiseptic smell of the hospital.
"I should go get your sister. I'm sure she wants to see you as soon as possible."
Which is distinctly not climbing into bed with Weying, but is possibly even better. So, like, Weying will allow it with only minimal complaining. Minutes later, Lan Chan comes back trailing behind Zheng Yanli, who bursts into the room looking fully prepared to fight anyone who might try to stop her. It's a look very reminiscent of Jiang Cheng. He suspects they both inherited that specific look from their mother, and Zheng Yanli's just comes out less often.
"Oh, Aying, she's beautiful,"
Yanli says, bent over a little so that she can join Weying in peering down at the baby all swaddled in pink. Weying agrees. His daughter's face is scrunched and red and angry, like she's mad at the world, absolutely furious to be out of the safe, warm home Weying has carried her around in for the last 9 months, and Weying thinks she might be the most beautiful thing in the world. "This is your Auntie Yanli," Weying tells his daughter, holding her up a little to see his sister, even if he's pretty sure that a barely hours-old baby has the eyesight of a naked mole rat. She's the best cook in the entire world, but she also has the worst taste in men, so it all balances out.
Don't listen to him. My taste is fine,
Yanli tells the baby very seriously. The time you dated Kevin Wong begs to differ.
One, I was in high school. No one can be judged for the choices they make when they're filled with hormones and acne,
Yanli says, like she has ever had such a thing as acne.
And two, you're hardly one to judge, Wei Ying.
Hey, I just gave birth. You can't be mean to me, Wei Ying pouts dramatically. Also, the fact that I have Lan Chan now erases all my bad relationship choices. That's just science.
That's not science at all, Wei Ying. What the fuck?
Says a new voice, and Wei Ying lights up at the sight of Jiang Cheng with a deeply uncomfortable-looking Nie Huaisong trailing behind him.
You made it,
Yanli chirps while Wei Ying says,
Don't swear in front of my baby. What the fuck is wrong with you?
You, Jiang Cheng waves a finger at Wei Ying.
You just...
Come meet your niece, Jiang Cheng, Wei Ying interrupts, and Jiang Cheng deflates before his very eyes, going soft as he approaches and can see Wei Ying's daughter in all her scrunchy-faced glory.
Oh, Jiang Cheng says, she's so small.
Which is highly relatable, but also,
she certainly didn't feel that way. Shut up, she's tiny. I can't believe it. I can't believe they're going to let you go home with her. You almost let a gerbil die. How are you a parent? How am I an uncle? What the fuck? You can't have a kid. We're still kids.
Jiang Cheng says with just a hint of crazy eyes. Wei Ying thinks he should be offended, but this is a classic Jiang Cheng freakout if Wei Ying has ever seen one. Huaisong is still looking vaguely horrified by the mere idea of small children, but he does seem to relax at Jiang Cheng's histrionics. Wei Ying refuses to contemplate too deeply how their relationship works.
Almost let a gerbil die, Jiang Cheng. Emphasis on the almost,
Wei Ying insists, and ignores the way Yanli, who seems very pointedly staying out of this one, presses a hand over her mouth to hide what is certainly a laugh at Wei Ying's expense.
Yeah, because I reminded you to feed it, Jiang Cheng insists, jabbing a finger in Wei Ying's direction.
Good thing I've got Lan Chan around to remind me to feed the baby, then.
You can't just pass the responsibility of a baby onto someone else, Wei Ying. That's not how babies work.
Wei Ying is about to insist that actually that is how it works, just to really get his brother going, because Wei Ying just had an whole entire literal child, so he definitely deserves to rile Jiang Cheng up if that's what he wants. But then Lan Chan says,
I don't mind,
and draws the eyes of everyone in the room his way.
Lan Chan,
Wei Ying says pathetically, covering his face with one hand, his cheeks feeling suddenly very warm.
You have to warn me before you say things like that.
They take Wei Shanxian home, and the first couple weeks passed in an exhausting, milk-stained, diaper-changing, perpetually worried blur. In his sleep-deprived state, Wei Ying is about 5 seconds from a panic attack at any moment, and is half convinced that Lan Chan will get sick of this all and decide Wei Ying isn't worth it, and he ends up crying in the bathroom about the very idea of that at least 3 times. And then, in the midst of one of Wei Ying's worst days, when Shanxian won't stop shrieking, and Lan Chan has had to leave, and Wei Ying is pacing a hole into the carpet, begging Asian to somehow, some way, just let Wei Ying know what the hell she wants, because he's tried everything he really has, Madame Yu arrives. And here's the thing. Wei Ying's relationship with the woman who adopted him has always been a messy, complicated thing. But when she shows up, having corralled 2 of Wei Ying's teenage neighbors into carrying more Tupperware containers of food up than Wei Ying can ever eat, and then plucks a screaming Shanxian out of Wei Ying's arms with a,
Let me get a good look at my granddaughter.
Wei Ying thinks he might actually sob with something that feels like relief. Asian goes quiet abruptly, and Wei Ying is still unsure about the whole, how far exactly can a several-week-old baby actually see thing, but she seems to be taking Madame Yu very seriously. He suspects for a delirious moment that there's some sort of communication going on there. Maybe Asian is letting her grandmother know how inadequate Wei Ying's skill at motherhood is, and Madame Yu is sympathizing with her. It feels possible. They're probably telepathically judging him right this very moment. Wei Ying's daughter is a tiny little traitor, and he can't even resent her for it because he'd judge himself right now, too.
Go, shower,
Madame Yu tells him, or, well, orders, more like. Weiying might be a fully grown adult with a bachelor's degree, well on his way to a master's and looking into PhD programs, and with a child of his very own at this point. But there are still things even he doesn't dare do, one of those things being disobeying the woman who raised him, especially when his hesitant look earns him a...
I've raised 3 children into responsible adults, and you think I can't even handle my own granddaughter? Go.
There's a compliment buried in Madame Yu's brusque words, the implication that Weiying himself is actually a responsible adult. But Weiying doesn't dare point it out in case she takes it back, and instead does as he's told, scampering off to the bathroom with one last peck to the top of Shanxian's downy head. When Lan Chan arrives home, Madame Yu is already gone, having left after a whirlwind of a day with an order that Weiying and Asian would be coming to dinner next week, and leaving no chance for Weiying to argue that toting an infant into the city on a Friday night all by himself sounds like the opposite of fun. Lan Chan takes in their quiet, clean apartment, but very suspiciously doesn't show any signs of surprise.
So Madame Yu came over today, Weiying says.
Lan Chan says, with a little bit of a sympathetic wince.
Weiying should probably tell him that it went surprisingly well, but first he's going to let him stew in it a little. It's what he deserves, the traitor.
When I told your sister you were having a rough day, I didn't expect her to send Madame Yu.
I am taking back your Zhejie texting privileges, Weiying says, waving a judgmental finger at Lan Chan.
No, really though, it was actually fine. Kind of good, even. She might have even complimented me, I think. I mean, in a very Madame Yu way, but still. She loves Xianxian, which of course she does. My daughter is perfect.
This morning you told me you think she's possessed,
Lan Chan points out, settling into the spot next to Weiying on the couch.
And I stand by it. Have you heard her scream? That's the noise you hear in hell, Lan Chan.
It doesn't make my daughter any less perfect. She's just a perfect demon child, Weiying says very seriously, tipping sideways until he's sprawled across Lan Chan's lap, blinking up at him.
Of course,
Lan Chan agrees, carding his fingers through Weiying's hair until he relaxes into it, pressing his head into Lan Chan's hand like a cat.
She's your child, so we shouldn't expect her to be human.
Lan Chan, that's so mean. You're so mean to me. Pity this poor, poor Omega who was being bullied by a mean, mean alpha.
Weiying widens his eyes, strutting his lip out in an over-exaggerated display.
Oh no, someone alert the authorities,
Lan Chan says, deadpan.
Bully,
Weiying says, then yawns and stretches dramatically.
So, I'm freshly napped and no longer spiraling, and Xianxian is asleep, and I can think clearly for, the first time since I went into labor? Yeah, sounds right. Which means that obviously we should probably talk about the fact that you totally claimed my baby.
Lan Chan's eyes dart to the side, towards the door to the nursery where Weiying's daughter is asleep. Like maybe she'll awake suddenly and save him from this discussion. No luck there, pal, because Madame Yu performed some sort of crazy witchcraft that means his daughter is out like a fucking light. Weiying is tempted to put the woman on fucking speed dial for that alone.
Should we?
Lan Chan, I like you very much. Very, very, very much. But you can't just, like, play dad if you don't really mean it, okay? It's not good for her and it's not good for me.
It's hard to look serious while sprawled across Lan Chan's lap, but he does his best. He needs to know what they're doing here, what Lan Chan thinks they're doing here.
I don't say things I don't mean,
Lan Chan says, so seriously that Weiying has to fight the urge to lean up and kiss his very serious-looking eyebrows. He fails and darts up to press his lips just above one of Lan Chan's eyebrows and then the other. They're too cute. It's terrible.
That's very good to know,
Weiying says, nodding as seriously as he can manage. And then, before either of them can say anything else, Shanxian starts crying, and Weiying decides, as Lan Chan slides out from under him, and goes to take care of his shrieking child, that maybe, just maybe, that's enough of a conversation on the subject.
And this is Shanxian chewing on her hand. And this one is Xianxian laughing at Lan Chan when he makes faces at her, which are honestly just slightly different than his normal expression, but she doesn't seem to mind. He makes ridiculous noises too, but apparently I'm not allowed to film them, the jerk.
Gross,
Wen Ting says, leaning over Weiying's shoulder while he scrolls through the pictures on his phone.
I know. They're so cute. It's disgusting, isn't it?
Wei Ying says, though he's smiling so bright, his cheeks hurt a little from it.
It is. You're so happy. It's terrible,
Wen Ting says, and abandons Wei Ying and his phone when their number is called. She returns moments later, bearing a tray of food, and slides into the seat across from Wei Ying. Somehow, a brief moment in time where Wen Ting is not working or studying, and Wei Ying is baby-free, had opened itself up so they can go on a secret McDonald's run. Not that it's really secret. There's just something inherently more fun about acting like it is. And it's nice to spend some time with Wen Ting, listening to her make fun of him, and eating food devoid of any real nutritional value. Wei Ying dumps an entire packet of salt on his fries and then pops one in his mouth. They fall into silence, which is what Wei Ying will blame if asked, for why he blurts out, "Do you think it's okay?" into the silence. Wen Ting blinks.
What? Being this happy. Think I should prepare for a disaster? Wei Ying. I'm just saying, this kind of thing reeks of that really nice lull before the climax in a book where everything turns to shit.
You're such an idiot,
Wen Ting says flatly.
Hey,
Wei Ying protests, flicking a French fry half-heartedly across the table at her.
I'm being vulnerable here, and you're being mean to me.
No, you're looking for trouble because you've got terrible self-esteem or whatever else it is that your issue is. And I'm being your friend and reminding you not to be an idiot,
Wen Ting says, sounding a little like she wants to shake him.
Which, honestly, is not that different from how she normally sounds.
They're best friends, but Wei Ying knows that he is also simultaneously the bane of Wen Ting's existence.
Okay, but where is your child right now?
Wen Ting asks, before Wei Ying can get a proper word in edgewise.
With Lan Chan,
Wei Ying answers promptly.
And what are they doing?
A baby music class, I think.
Lan Chan's very dedicated to the concept that music is a vital thing for a tiny growing mind.
I blame the child development classes he apparently took in undergrad.
Right. So he's literally surrounded by actual infants banging on, like, tambourines or tiny drums or whatever. A thing that honestly sounds like pure torture. Will you sit here with me and eat chicken nuggets?
And a Big Mac,
Wei Ying says, dunking a chicken nugget into ketchup and sweet and sour, then popping the entire thing into his mouth.
But yeah, that's more or less correct. And yet you're still worried that something bad will happen? What, are you concerned that after all this, he's going to decide it's not worth it and leave you?
There's something strangely gentle in Wen Ting's tone, and Wei Ying hates it a little. It reminds him of times during undergrad when he wasn't doing so great at the whole taking care of himself thing. And when Ting and Yanli cornered him with their good cop, bad cop, concerned older siblings tag team act.
It's stupid, isn't it?
Wei Ying asks, tugging his hand through his hair in a fretful little motion.
Incredibly. But you've always been dumb, so what else can we expect? You're mean. You're so mean to me. I'm getting a new best friend. Good luck with that,
Wen Ting says and steals one of his chicken nuggets.
No one will take you off my hands. I've tried.
When Wei Ying arrives home after an afternoon spent with Wen Ting, and then, once he corralled him into joining them with Wen Ning, it's to the sight of Lan Chan standing on his forearms on his yoga mat, his body curved until his feet nearly touch his head.
Bendy, Wei Ying says faintly before shaking himself out of it.
How was Secret McDonald's?
Lan Chan asks, and folds himself out of his position and into another much less upside-down one as Wei Ying crosses over to scoop Xian Xian out of her little baby bouncer. She'd been chewing, for all intents and purposes, considering her lack of teeth, on her fist, and when Wei Ying gets her situated in his arms, she smacks him in the face with a slobbery hand.
Ah, motherhood,
Wei Ying says as he attempts to use his shirt to wipe off his daughter's hand and then her face, where it's all drooly. It's a good thing that he loves her so much, because babies, as he has learned, are actually kind of disgusting.
You're not supposed to just say that, Lan Chan. It makes the secret part of Secret McDonald's less fun when someone knows.
Oh, right. How was your not-secret McDonald's lunch date with Wen Ting?
Lan Chan asks, looking in no way guilty for crushing Wei Ying's adventurous spirit. How rude. How mean. His boyfriend is a cruel, cruel man.
It's kind of hot.
She was mean to me and called me an idiot,
Wei Ying says, with a dramatic sigh, and gently gnaws on Xian Xian's cheek, until she laughs a baby laugh that is frankly way too cute to exist.
So, you know, the usual. It was great.
Hmm, Lan Chan says, and Wei Ying suspects the single syllable is meant to mean, well, she's not wrong.
How was the baby enrichment thing?
Wei Ying asks and pokes at Xian Xian.
Do you feel very enriched, sweet pea? Did you get to bang on a tambourine or shake some maracas? I bet you were very good at it. The very best baby maraca shaker to ever exist.
She is very talented,
Lan Chan says, practically glowing with a fatherly sort of pride.
Ugh, Wei Ying thinks he loves him for it. Gross.
She's an infant. The only talent she has is blowing spit bubbles, Wei Ying says, instead of, I love you, let's move to a quiet, sleepy beach town where we can have a real backyard and a good school system without me having to compromise my morals on private schools and have 10 more kids together and then die holding hands like the old couple in the Titanic.
Thank you very much, brain-to-mouth filter, for choosing now to work. Wei Ying appreciates your highly needed services.
Yes, and she's very talented at it,
Lan Chan says, the picture of seriousness.
The most talented spit bubble blower there is. A spit bubble blowing prodigy,
Wei Ying agrees solemnly and bounces Xian Xian until she shrieks with very adorable baby laughter.
So cute. Wei Ying's baby is so cute.
He hopes all the other moms are jealous of him and his adorable baby and his hot superloaded boyfriend.
Later, Wei Ying curls into the space in front of Lan Chan in bed. The baby monitor on the nightstand and Xian Xian safe in her crib in the nursery that Lan Chan worked so hard on. Lan Chan's breath is warm against the back of his neck, followed by the soft press of his lips, the warm brush of his hand up over Wei Ying's side, over the expanse of his ribs, and then back down to his hip.
Lan Chan, Wei Ying breathes into the quiet stillness of their bedroom. I really like you, you know?
I had no idea.
Lan Chan says, dry as a desert, the words shaped against Wei Ying's neck, stirring the fine hairs there and making him shiver.
I know, it's very shocking, isn't it?
Wei Ying asks, twisting around in Lan Chan's grip until he's facing him. He knocks their knees together before he tangles one leg up with Lan Chan's, hooking the other up over his hip.
A mystery, even.
Oh no, not a mystery.
Wei Ying bumps his nose against Lan Chan's, feeling that sort of giddy happiness that's been growing dangerously familiar over the last few months, when Lan Chan lets him, and even bumps his nose back to Wei Ying's in return.
It's definitely because of your money.
Hmm, of course. What else would it be?
Lan Chan plays along, straight-faced, and Wei Ying wants to kiss him for it.
Certainly nothing like feelings. I'm very pragmatic.
That's what everyone says about you, yes. That Wei Ying, so pragmatic.
There's a note of teasing to it, and Wei Ying harumps a fake offended noise and bites Lan Chan's jaw.
Mean. You're so mean to your poor Ah Ying,
Wei Ying says, with overdramatic big eyes and a fake pout.
Hmm, Lan Chan agrees. I should make it up to you.
You really, really should. I deserve it for all that I've suffered.
And how should I do that?
Lan Chan asks, rolling them until Wei Ying is pinned under him, which, is a very good position. Wei Ying is very fond of this position.
You're very smart, Lan Chan. I'm sure you can think of something,
Wei Ying says with a ridiculous waggle of his eyebrows. And Lan Chan does. Wei Ying manages to make it until well after his daughter is born before he meets Lan Chiren.
I just think that you could have taken her with you for dinner with your uncle and brother, and I could have stayed home and hid under our blankets all night,
Wei Ying says on the drive, half turned around and leaning over his seat to see his daughter. He hates the rear-facing car seat thing. What if something happens and he can't see it?
Uncle wants to meet you,
Lan Chan says.
He strongly implied I'm being unfilial by not introducing my partner.
Oh, he and Madame Yu should start a club.
Wei Ying says, debating the merits of crawling into the back seat. He doesn't see any cops who could pull them over for it, so it's probably safe.
By the way, we're going into the city for dinner next Friday. Madame Yu wants to meet the man I somehow convinced to help raise my child.
Lun Chun is far too polite to share his opinion on that, but Wei Ying does spot the slightest little crinkle of his nose out of the corner of his eye.
We already met last year at the New Year's parade.
Oh, yeah, sure, but that was just a guy I knew from school. A friend, not my boyfriend. She only judged you like she would a normal person then, not family. Being family makes it so, so much worse.
Lan Chan says, which Wei Ying is going to take to mean, okay, but I will be judging your adoptive mother right back.
That a boy, Wei Ying says, and kisses Lan Chan's cheek quickly before he clambers over his seat and the center console and into the back seat with Xian Xian. When they get to Lan Chan's uncle's house, it's immaculate. Lan Huan and Meng Yao are there already, also immaculate, and Wei Ying is attempting to calm a suddenly shrieking ASEAN with spit up on his shoulder because she's mad. Maybe? That the car stopped? Possibly? Wei Ying's not sure, but he's suspecting that's the problem, considering she was fucking fine until Lan Chan pulled into the driveway and shut off the car.
Hey, come on, sweet girl, please calm down, he begs, pacing back and forth through the very nice hallway just outside of Lan Chiren's very nice living room.
You're going to meet your great-uncle. Isn't that neat? I'm sure he's... Well, okay, I don't think he's nice, but he raised Lan Chan and you love Lan Chan, so he must be pretty okay, you know?
A throat clears behind him and Wei Ying whirls around, coming face to face with Lan Chan's uncle.
I didn't mean that. I'm sure you're very nice,
Wei Ying blurts as Xian Xian shrieks in his ear. Lan Chiren says, which, unlike with Lan Chan, tells him absolutely nothing. Then he puts his hands out.
Let me see her.
That's okay. I'll get her to calm down, I promise. She won't ruin dinner or anything. I'll make sure of it,
Wei Ying promises. Lan Chan has told him that Lan Chiren can be very particular, though maybe not in so many words. He doesn't think the man will take that out on a baby, but like, Wei Ying's not that sure. The guy's practically a stranger, and his whole vibe doesn't exactly exude warmth and patience. Lan Chiren stares at him. Wei Ying crumbles under that stare and passes Xian Xian over. It only takes a few soft-spoken words Wei Ying can't quite make out and a little bit of bouncing, and she goes blissfully, blessedly silent.
What the fuck?
Wei Ying whispers to himself. He's good with children, Lan Huan says quietly from behind Wei Ying and nearly gives him a fucking heart attack.
Jesus Christ!
Wei Ying hisses, hand clutched to his chest, before he processes what Lan Huan just told him and he gives the man a doubtful look.
Your brother said he used to make you kneel in the garden as punishment.
Which, in the grand scheme of things, Wei Ying thinks, is not that bad as far as parental punishment goes. Though at the same time, he can't imagine Lan Chan ever having misbehaved enough to warrant that.
He's good with children until they can talk,
Lan Huan corrects easily, shooting Wei Ying a wry smile.
You need to be calm, Lan Chiren tells Wei Ying, seemingly ignoring his own nephew besmirching his good name. Infants are very sensitive. They can tell if you're panicking. An environment of calm is the most appropriate one.
Sure, Wei Ying says, thinking of growing up with the Jiangs and how that had often been the opposite of calm, and they all turned out okay. Okay, sure, his sister has some massively people-pleasing tendencies, and his brother has some rage issues that aren't exactly helped by the huge inferiority complex, and Wei Ying is, well, Wei Ying, but like, overall they're fine.
There is no reason to panic about meeting me,
Lan Chiren continues, and Wei Ying startles.
Even if I disapprove, it's unlikely Ah Chan will change his mind about you just because of my opinion. He certainly did not when I disapproved of his choice in university or major.
Thanks?
Lan Chiren says, which, again, tells Wei Ying absolutely nothing, especially when the man is looking at him like he's staring through to Wei Ying's soul and finding it wanting. Wei Ying is familiar with that look. Wei Ying has felt that very look fall upon him from Madame Hu at least once a week since he was a kid and Zheng Fengmian carted him home and metaphorically dumped him in her lap.
It's time for dinner,
Lan Chiren says, and then sweeps out of the hallway, still carrying Wei Ying's daughter.
He likes you,
Lan Huan says, patting Wei Ying's shoulder.
That's liking me?
Dinner is a tame, bland, mostly quiet affair, where Lan Chan's uncle totally monopolizes Wei Ying's only child. Lan Chiren asks how Lan Chan's studies are going, and asks Lan Huan something about work that Wei Ying doesn't follow,
and makes what must be a particularly pointed remark about children to Lan Huan and Meng Yao, if the way Meng Yao suddenly white-knuckles his chopsticks is any indication. But overall, it's quiet and a little bit tense and a whole lot too formal for Wei Ying, who grew up with the constant noise of the Jiangs. As soon as it's over, Lan Qiren retires to the living room with Wei Ying's precious only child and the light of his life, and proceeds to monopolize his child until they leave. Lan Qiren seems like a stodgy, overly blunt old man, but he's actually a baby thief.
That went well, Lan Chan says later, when Wei Ying has recovered his child and they've been sent home with a container of leftovers,
and an entire box filled with Lan Chan and Lan Huan's baby things for Shanxian. Meng Yao nearly broke a pair of chopsticks. They were metal.
It went well,
Lan Chan confirms as Wei Ying shifts Shanxian up a little until she's tucked a little better into his chest, and Lan Chan leads him into the elevator with the hand on the small of his back.
He likes Asian.
He better, Wei Ying grumbles, pressing a kiss to the top of her tiny head. She's perfect, after all.
You called her a demonic hellbeast sent specifically to torture you via sleep deprivation just last night.
Okay, you keep reminding me of the things I say about my precious angel in the middle of the night, and that's really impolite. Didn't your uncle teach you any manners?
No,
Lan Chan says, deadpan and straight-faced, entirely a lie. And Wei Ying can't help it. He just has to use his free hand to tug Lan Chan in and kiss him until the elevator takes them up and towards home. The baby is with Zheng Yanli. The baby is with Zheng Yanli, and Wei Ying is high and Lan Chan is mouthing at the soft skin of Wei Ying's stomach. Lan Chan is also high, which is maybe Wei Ying's fault, just a little, because he'd said, Hey, Lan Chan, we don't have a kid. We don't have a kid all day. And we should pretend to be teenagers and get super high. And then had cemented the whole deal by coaxing Lan Chan and depressing his mouth to Wei Ying's so that Wei Ying could blow smoke into it. At some point after that, Lan Chan's head had ended up in Wei Ying's lap, Wei Ying's fingers tangled in his hair, which had led to this, Lan Chan having shoved Wei Ying's shirt up and kissing at whatever skin he can reach with a single-minded focus that Wei Ying is convinced only Lan Chan can achieve.
Lan Chan,
Wei Ying whines, tipping his head back against the couch, feeling a little tingly, a bit floaty, and a whole lot good.
I am not a tasty snack.
Lan Chan makes a disagreeing noise.
Wrong. Wei Ying is the tastiest snack,
he insists and sinks his teeth in just below Wei Ying's belly button.
Laya, Lan Chan, Wei Ying yelps, laughing. What a mean alpha trying to eat your poor, poor Wei Ying.
Lan Chan agrees and manhandles Wei Ying just a little, just like he likes, until Wei Ying is sprawled out on his back on the couch and Lan Chan is settled between his legs.
We'll lead Wei Ying up and carry him around here, he says, thumping a fist between his ribcage.
It's kind of sweet. Super fucking weird, yeah, because Lan Chan is apparently an actual crazy person when under the influence of any sort of mind-altering substance. And not just alcohol, like Wei Ying had thought before now. But, you know, also sweet. Can't, Wei Ying argues as Lan Chan rucks his shirt up further and gets his mouth on Wei Ying's chest, dragging biting kisses across the skin.
How am I supposed to do my job and annoy you, then?
Heartburn,
Lan Chan says so seriously that Wei Ying tips his head back and cackles.
Lan Chan, babe, you're so fucking weird. Did you know that? Did you know? Oh.
He breaks off with a little noise because, yep, that is a mouth on his nipple, worrying it between his teeth while one large hand makes a valiant attempt at shoving his sweatpants down. So, huh, they're doing this then. Wei Ying is down for stoned sex. Wei Ying is so incredibly down. If Wei Ying was any more down, he'd be in the sewers.
Oh, hey, let me help with that.
Wei Ying lifts his hips, giving a little shimmy until his pants are down, and then kicking them the rest of the way off.
Thank you,
Lan Chan says, so prompt and polite that Wei Ying just has to press his hands to either side of Lan Chan's face so that he can squish his cheeks a little and then drag him up into a kiss. It's slow and a little messy, and Wei Ying's shirt is still rucked up under his arms, a little uncomfortable where it's rolled up into itself under him. One of his socks is still on, because only one came off with his pants. And he still has baby weight that Lan Chan's fingers dig into when he palms at Wei Ying's hip and makes a low, satisfied noise into Wei Ying's mouth. And Wei Ying feels so much. He feels split open with how much he fucking loves this man and feels loved by him. Because how the fuck do you explain anything that's happened? Anything that Lan Chan's done in Wei Ying's life except as the absolute insanity of being ridiculously in love. It's so stupid. It's amazing. Wei Ying feels like he could float away on that feeling, which, sure, could be the weed talking, but also is definitely the whole love thing. We should get married, Wei Ying blurts against Lan Chan's mouth before his head can catch up and stop him. Lan Chan pulls back with a little, oh.
I mean, not right now, obviously, but like, eventually, maybe, if you want. I mean, you want to, right? Not to be all overconfident, but it seems like you might be in love with me. I mean, you pretty much claimed my kid is your own kid, even though she's not really yours, so there's no obligation there or anything, just...
Shenxian is mine,
Lan Chan says stubbornly, mouth turned down mulishly.
Cute.
Lan Chan is so cute when he's stoned. Wei Ying is definitely going to have to try to make this a more regular occurrence, if only for the cuteness factor.
I know, honey, she is,
Wei Ying says, patting at Lan Chan's arm soothingly.
She's kind of got your nose, even, which is weird considering she doesn't actually have your genetic material, but also, like, really fucking cute. Like, wow, what a cute, lucky baby. Looking like you is, like, the ideal. You're so handsome, Lan Chan. Did you know that? Wait, no, I'm getting distracted. Marriage! That's where I was going with this. Lan Chan.
Yes.
Huh?
Marriage. We should get married,
Lan Chan says.
And...
He trails off, pressing his mouth to Wei Ying's throat, right where a bond mark would go if they were to do that.
Oh,
Wei Ying says and swallows, tipping his head back as Lan Chan's mouth drags over the thin skin of his throat.
Yeah, we should do that too. Maybe not now, though. I'm down with sex while stoned, incredibly down. In fact, we should definitely get back to that soon. But I'm pretty sure you should be, like, 100% more sober to be making lifelong irreversible decisions, Lan Chan.
Lan Chan hums agreeably.
Okay.
And then he shimmies down a little and gets his mouth on Wei Ying's dick.
Shit, okay. Straight to it. I can do that. I am A-okay with that. Fuck, Lan Chan.
Wei Ying thumps his head back against the arm of the couch, hips hitching up a little into the warm heat of Lan Chan's mouth. After a moment that feels both infinitely short and endlessly long, Wei Ying slides his fingers into Lan Chan's hair and hugs a little, directing Lan Chan's head up and away from his dick.
Not that that isn't great, because fuck, Lan Chan, your mouth. But I was kind of hoping you could fuck me.
Lan Chan, it turns out, has absolutely no problem with that. And it's not long before Wei Ying's hitching his hips back into Lan Chan's hand, three fingers deep and lip already bitten red and swollen. He's so fucking wet, sticky with slick between his thighs, and he arches into Lan Chan, trying to get this show fully on the road soon, before he dies of old age.
Lan Chan, fuck, I'm ready. I was ready fucking ages ago. Before you even started this, centuries ago, millennia. Lan Chan, please.
Lan Chan is, thankfully, blessedly, interested in obeying Wei Ying's begging for once. And he tugs Wei Ying up onto his knees, and Wei Ying is filled exactly like he wants to be, back arching as he presses back into the fullness.
Lan Chan,
he says, and then again and again as Lan Chan leans over him, mouthing at the knob of Wei Ying's spine. Lan Chan fucks him lazy and slow and bone-meltingly good. He's not as high as when this started, but he's still a little floaty around the edges, in the way that leaves him able to focus on this, and only this, the slide of Lan Chan's dick, the line of Lan Chan's body draped over his back, the way his hands grasp at Wei Ying's and push them into the couch beneath them. Lan Chan gets a hand around Wei Ying's dick, and Wei Ying dissolves into a stream of,
fuck, please, Lan Chan,
as he comes, arching into it, and then going boneless, slumped forward into the couch cushion. Lan Chan fucks him through it, doesn't let up for a moment, and ignores Wei Ying's half-hearted little whining, complaining noises, just like Wei Ying wants him to. If Lan Chan listened, Wei Ying might have to murder him, actually. At some point, he realizes the complaints have died in his throat,
and he's begging instead, a litany of,
Luncheon, babe, come on, do it, not me, make me feel it. Please, 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 please.
Weighing.
Luncheon presses the word against Weighing's throat, scrapes his teeth against the gland there. Just that little bit of danger before he bites down lower, at the crook where neck meets shoulder, as he comes, fucking Weighing through it as he swells, until it catches and they're locked together.
Big.
Weighing whines. Luncheon's knot always feels so big, especially when he's like this, wrung out and a little oversensitive.
Shh.
Luncheon hushes, rubbing soothing hands over Weighing's stomach, up and down his sides, over his hips, in long soothing strokes that make Weighing want to melt.
I am shh,
Weighing says nonsensically, wiggling a little until Luncheon pinches his side.
So mean.
You like it.
Weighing comes out, agreeing. Later, when they've managed to detach and Luncheon has cleaned Weighing up and literally carried him to their bed, Weighing drapes himself over Luncheon like he's the best sort of mattress.
So, you're like totally sober now, right?
Luncheon hums, arms wrapped around Weighing snugly, fiddling with the fingers of one of Weighing's hands. It's nice. Peaceful. Yanli won't be dropping Shanxian off for at least a couple more hours because she wants the whole baby experience as some sort of preparation for her and Jin's issuing, apparently, which means Weighing gets to spend at least a little while longer just like this. It's nice, except for the part where Weighing will start crawling out of his skin in roughly 20 minutes because he misses his kid.
Were you serious?
Weighing asks after another long moment.
About?
Luncheon asks, a rumble beneath Weighing.
You know,
Weighing says, turning over so that he's on his stomach, legs tangled with Luncheon's, arms crossed over Luncheon's chest and chin propped on them so he can peer at him.
Marriage and all of that?
Very.
Weighing's eyebrows shoot up.
Really?
He hadn't thought Luncheon was joking about it or anything, but plenty of people say plenty of things when they're about to have sex.
Weighing,
Luncheon says, smoothing a hand through Weighing's hair, the tiny downturn of his mouth exceedingly exasperated.
I know you mentioned this earlier, but in case you haven't caught on, I am actually in love with you.
Luncheon!
Weighing flails his arms out and hides his face in Luncheon's chest.
You can't just tell me that kind of thing without warning me first.
I'm sorry,
Luncheon says, and doesn't sound sorry in the least.
I'll make sure to send a notarized warning 2 weeks in advance next time.
You're so mean,
Weighing complains at Luncheon's teasing.
I can't believe I'm in love with someone who's so mean to me.
Luncheon gets this small, flushed, pleased look about him at Weighing's words, and Weighing can't help but kiss him.
I want a ring,
Weighing says, several minutes of lazy kissing later.
A big one, but not bigger than Yanli's or else Madame Yu will have a conniption.
Right. Twice the size of your sister's. Got it.
Luncheon!
Weighing starts and is shut up before he gets a chance to really get going, when his dumb, smug boyfriend slash possibly fiancé kisses him again. Epilogue. The newly one-year-old Aling is still a creature of mostly roles as he toddles after Xianxian, shrieking his favorite word out of the few he seems to know so far.
No!
And holding onto the outdoor furniture in Yanli's tiny yard for support as he goes. Ayuan chasing after them both with tossed out,
Sorry, uncles. Sorry, aunties.
As he goes.
They grow up so fast,
Weighing says, wiping a mostly fake tear from his eye as he leans into Luncheon's side. Jiang Yanli is radiant, practically glowing as she watches her son.
How do you handle it?
Yanli asks, turning her gaze onto Weighing.
I don't,
Weighing says honestly.
Like a week ago, Asian told me she's 3 and not a baby, and I had a meltdown and told her she was grounded until she was 40. I don't even think she knows what grounded is yet.
You didn't actually ground her, did you? Yanli asks, sounding a little like she's fighting laughter over Weighing's plight.
Yes, Weying says, at the same time Lan Chan says, no.
No? No? I bear you a beautiful, perfect daughter who loves you most, despite the fact that I spent 42 hours in labor.
It gets longer every time, Lan Chan tells Yan Li, who hides her smile behind her hand, like that will keep Weying from realizing they're conspiring against him. The fact that his older sister and his husband have become close friends in the last couple of years is a tragedy.
With her, and you tell me no? No! Divorce! I am running away to Aruba to live out the rest of my days, unloved, on a beach drinking margaritas.
Why do you have to be like this?
Jiang Cheng asks when he comes through the sliding glass door at the tail end of Weying's tangent, an entire stack of wrapped birthday gifts in hand.
Jia, where do you want the presents?
The table,
Zheng Yanli says, gesturing to a table with its mountain of presents. At the same time, Weying says,
holy shit, Jiang Cheng, did you buy out an entire Babies R Us? Babies R Us doesn't even exist anymore, numbnuts,
Jiang Cheng says as he stalks off towards the table.
That's not an answer,
Weying yells after him.
Juju!
Xian Xian shrieks as she abandons Ayuan and Aling and skids toward Jiang Cheng in a whirl of flailing toddler limbs, only to be swooped up into Jiang Cheng's arms and settled on his hip.
How's my favorite girl?
Jiang Cheng asks, flashing Wei Ying's daughter the kind of smile that Wei Ying and the rest of the Jiang has only discovered was possible when Xian Xian was born, before looking towards Jin Zixuan with a haughty look.
Look, she loves me most. She's already seen me, dumbass. You got here late.
Jin Zixuan says, pretending to be unbothered as he fakes his way, through acting like he has any idea what he's doing with the grill. Eventually, Nia Mingjue or Mian Mian will swoop in to make sure food gets cooked properly. And if they don't, Weying's pretty sure Madam Yu and Madam Jen will have an entire spread prepared in the kitchen already, just waiting to swoop in to save the day if it's needed.
Can we not call people dumbasses around my three-year-old? Who, may I remind everyone, is very smart and repeats things?
Weying asks. Only to be ignored because Shen Xian has shoved a rock into Jiang Cheng's face and is babbling on and on about it, very enthusiastically, which, to be fair, is probably infinitely more interesting than Wei Ying's complaining.
You'll never betray me, right?
Wei Ying asks Ayuan when he leads Jin Ling over, holding onto his chubby little toddler hands in an attempt to keep him steady. It works, mostly, though Jin Ling plops down on his butt as soon as they come to a stop.
Never,
Ayuan says solemnly, 4 years old and very serious. Weying can't help but coo and bend over to pinch his round little cheeks. When Weying stands back up, Wen Ting is there, squeezing Yanli's shoulder and apologizing for having to leave so early, before she turns her sharp gaze on Weying and Lan Chan. Weying feels Lan Chan stand just a little bit straighter behind him, which is an incredibly neat effect that Wen Ting has on him. Weying understands. Wen Ting is terrifying.
You two are going to be okay with Ayuan tonight, right? His stuffed turtle's in Yanli's living room, so don't forget it. And if he doesn't go to bed by 7, he'll be cranky, so...
Wen Ting, Weying says, grabbing her shoulders, and fearing only for a brief moment the murder that gesture could possibly cause.
I know what to do. We take care of Ayuan all the time. We are literally in the process of making us taking care of Ayuan a 24/7 full-time permanent dealio.
Don't say dealio, it makes you sound so dumb.
And then we'll be having this conversation every other month, but in reverse, with me being the worrywart. We'll be fine. Lan Chan will remember his turtle, and we'll let him have some sugar because it's a birthday, but not too much sugar, and tuck him in at 7, and I'll drop him off at preschool in the morning. We've got this. We've kept an entire child alive for 3 years now. We're basically experts.
They are not experts. Shan Xian ate in Lego literally yesterday for reasons that Weying and Lan Chan decided they don't want to fathom, but apparently it was because
red tastes good.
But his words do seem to reassure Wen Ting at least a little.
Lan Chan,
Wen Ting says, looking to Weying's husband as though he's the final confirmation on this. Which, rude, but also fair. Lan Chan is at least half of Weying's self-control on any given day, and the other half can only be attributed to the thought, what would happen to Xian Xian if I did this?
He'll be fine,
Lan Chan says, taking Wen Ting's arm and leading her back into the house, the trail end of,
I won't let Weying convince him he's a radish this time either,
trailing back to Weying's ears.
Rude,
Wei Ying calls after his husband's retreating back.
You like pretending to be a radish, don't you?
He asks Ah Yuan, who nods seriously and wraps his arms around Wei Ying's leg. Later, there's cake and ice cream, and Jin Zixuan tries to get Jin Ling to shove his hands into the smash cake for pictures, and he shrieks,
No! No! No!
Because he's apparently just as prissy as his father is. Wei Ying records the moment on his phone while Lan Chan holds Wei Ying up with an arm around his waist because Wei Ying's laughing too hard at Jin Zixuan's baffled face and Jin Ling screaming to stand and hold his phone steady at the same time.
It's not that funny, asshole,
Jiang Cheng says and slaps Wei Ying upside the head before seeming to realize what he's done and looking at Xian Xian, who he's holding again because he's a dirty, rotten daughter thief, and saying,
Violence isn't the answer. We don't hit people, okay?
Yes, Juju,
Xian Xian says with a rapid little nod, seemingly hung up on every word her uncle says.
Why does our daughter love my dumb baby brother more than us?
Wei Ying asks Lan Chan mournfully.
Because even the best child can have terrible taste,
Lan Chan says quietly, and presses a quick kiss to Wei Ying's temple when Wei Ying tips his head back against Lan Chan's shoulder and cackles.
I like you so much, you know?
Wei Ying says once he's recovered, craning his head back to peer up at Lan Chan. Lan Chan says.
The marriage vows might have given it away.
You like me too,
Wei Ying sing-songs, the warm chatter of his family around him, and Ah Yuan's shriek of laughter as Nie Mingjue slings him up onto his shoulders, swelling above it.
I do,
Lan Chan agrees oh so easily, and God, Wei Ying is so in love with him, and the easy way Lan Chan loves him, the way he keeps loving him, that it makes him feel a little mad about it.
You do? Wow, Lan Chan, that's so embarrassing for you.
Wei Ying says and smacks a kiss to Lan Chan's cheek, reveling in the fond little smile that curls the corners of Lan Chan's lips up, and in Jiang Cheng's heckling about how they're gross and there's
children here, Wei Ying, your children.
The end.